Hello and welcome to the Adeptus Terra podcast, episode 4. It's Christmas time.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. This is going to be coming to you on Christmas Day, and we're recording early because it's Christmas, and yes, just messed up our normal order. We'll get back into the swing of things in January. I think a lot of podcasts are having that issue just because that's always going to be a thing. We've got a packed episode for you guys. We're really excited. We've come back last week from a really good event that we're going to spend quite a lot of time talking about. We've had lots of feedback from you guys. We've started connecting with you guys over the Facebook and...
which is facebook.com/?
Yeah.
/? The Adeptus Terra podcast.
Yeah, well done.
Search Adeptus Terra podcast.
Yeah, there's an advert. It's fine.
Yeah, I know, but...
It'll be fine.
I feel like we should.
But yeah, we've been talking to some of you guys over Facebook and some of our friends who listen and been able to have personal conversations. We even got some really good tips and advice from the Overlords guys.
Tips.
That's what I said, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, you didn't say any other word.
Okay, good, because that would mean editing.
We have to edit it anyway.
But yeah, it's Christmas, and we're excited, and we've got a lot to get through of the show. So we're going to go straight into our first segment, News from Terra.
So the News from Terra is where we talk about what we've done this month, hobby-wise, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you want to go first? As you have sent me the list, and it seems like your list is far greater than my list. So well, if you go first.
Yeah, all right. Cool. Well, yeah, we'll start with purchases, as we always do. I've noticed, as I've listened back to the old episodes, that I tend to buy stuff every month.
And you're addicted to Forge
and
World.
And that's a bit of a problem. Yeah, there is some Forge World this month, too. You'd think I'd just come up with it all at the same time and buy it in one big order, but no.
Save postage.
I like paying them postage.
Did
apparently.
You get the...
Yeah, and then I forgot about it until I ordered.
Yeah. So you didn't use the free voucher?
No,
then.
I've got two now.
Yeah, but...
They run out in January.
So you need to order something now?
Yeah. Bob Tyrodor.
Well, have you done my Christmas present yet? Because you could always buy me some Krieg.
I have done your Christmas present, and it's not 40k related.
No way.
Yeah. For the first year ever.
I feel kind of bad about what yours now.
I'll
take it back. You're fine. You don't need it anyway.
Definitely don't need it.
Not by these purchases anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, my purchases. My purchases this month have been a Carnifex bought from the Deathstorm box, the Blood Angel Nid box. I haven't got one of those. I bought the Carnifex off eBay, nice and cheap. And I ordered some of the Twin Link Devourer arms from Forge World.
Do they sell the arms separately?
Yeah. The Carnifex comes with arms, but the guns that are very good to use aren't actually part of the kit.
Right.
So you have to buy the arms from Forge World because they're the only guys that build them.
So when they do the Razorbacks, because my Razorback turrets on mine are from Forge World.
Yeah.
So it's just like that, but arms.
Yeah.
That's so bad.
And that is kind of annoying.
That's you could have a melter gun, but we're not giving you one.
Yeah, well, that's some... I mean, they're moving away from that, but some kits are still like that.
That's fine. Heavy flamers. Let's just suck it and learn.
Yeah, sneak peek. Sam got his Blood Angel stuff. but yeah, so I got a Carnifex and I built him up like straight away. He looks pretty cool. The one thing I would say is that he's on one of those new oval bases. So in the Deathstorm box, most people nerd raged about the 32mm base.
Hang on, why are they not on... Hang on, which one is he? Carnifex.
Carnifex.
Is
so
it
normally
looks like the face hugger.
It used to be called a Screamer Killer in the old days.
Right. Okay.
Going back, showing a bit of my age.
Quite old.
but yeah, he's on a new sized oval base. It's like a mini version of like the Trigon or the Morlock base or your Imperial Knight base.
Yes.
Which you'll hear about as well. I'm just giving hints towards what
stop
you're going to be talking
me.
About.
This is all I've got.
Yeah, okay, sorry, I'll stop doing that. But yeah, it's a bit weird. Like, everyone nerd raged about the 32mm bases and how kind of crazy that was and how groundbreaking. And then the Carnifex is on this really thin oval base. And I thought that's kind of cool. Like, why not? You know, he's normally on a Dreadnought base, but why could, you know, that doesn't matter. And I put him all together and I looked at him and he just looks really small.
Good.
I don't know if that was because he was right next to my Dimacheron or Trigon or the Morlock.
Malak.
No, you're wrong. But
I thought we were renaming everything.
No, we're not renaming everything. But yeah, it just looks a bit small. Made him look a little bit like, I don't know, it didn't look as tough as he would have done on a Dreadnought base.
Well, everything shrinks with age, Matt, I think. Oh, you mean the base is looking
the
small.
Base,
right.
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. I don't know. I mean, it'll probably grow on me, but I don't know. I'm not a massive fan of that. But yeah, in terms of models, that's actually all I've bought.
No way.
Which is amazing, isn't it? I have got other things that I've bought, but what models have you bought this month?
Did I have any? My Imperial Knight? My Imperial Knight was delivered the day after recording.
Yeah, so
wasn't
that
it?
Yeah, from
so
the
that
last episode.
Technically counts as purchasing this month. I'm trying not to buy a lot of stuff at the moment. I'm waiting for Christmas.
Me too.
Well, yeah, you buy stuff. I'm waiting for Christmas because I know that my wonderful girlfriend has bought me Warhammer from a strictly prescribed list of approved 40k.
You can
tanks.
Always trade it in if not.
Yeah, well, I saw the box when it turned up. Oh. So I know it is definitely either two tanks next to each other or it's a Forge World Titan.
It won't be a Forge World Titan.
So in which case I think it's probably two tanks next to each other. Probably. And the only two tanks I asked for were Chimeras.
Oh,
so
okay, cool.
For my Guard Force. So I'm kind of hoping
that's what
that's
you get.
Chimeras, because that'd be quite cool. That could be my hobby progress for January.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
So after I finish the other couple of stuff I've got. But in terms of purchasing stuff, I haven't really bought any models.
That's quite cool. That's not a bad thing. You've been getting stuff done.
Well, yeah.
Tell you what, you have a think and I'll go back into the stuff
that I bought.
No, there
definitely was no models that I bought.
Okay, cool.
I'm 99. No, I did buy a model. I did. I bought the Sangarinary Priest, the new one.
Oh, of course.
It is a sick model. I love it. It's not built yet. I had it out, all the pieces. Looked at it. It is so nice.
Okay, cool.
And it's not fine cast.
Yeah, it's plastic.
So
it's a plastic
that was
clamshell.
Always the best thing. So I've been doing a bit of internet research on it, and I found some really cool poses where people have modelled rather than having it as a chainsword, which at the moment, either they've put a power sword on it or a halberd. So I'm looking at doing some form of kit bash with that, as I've got quite a lot of grey knight
bits. Kit bashing.
So it'll be cool. I'll probably do it as a bit of a side piece. I'm now I've got it. I kind of want to and the codec. Oh. Now I've got the Codex as well. I kind of want to repaint my entire Blood Angel force. So we'll come back to that later.
Yeah, we will.
What else have you bought that isn't
okay,
model related?
So yeah, like I said, I only bought the Carnifex with the Devourer Arms this month, which was good. However, I bought the Tempestus Scions Codex.
Yeah, you did.
The Militarum Tempestus Codex. Yeah, I was always going to. I'm planning on doing, I think I shared last episode about my little 500-point force. To link in with my Space Wolves and all that kind of stuff.
Have you thought about using the Krieg models?
Yeah, I'm not going to. I quite like the new Scions, so I want to use those.
Really?
Yeah, I really like their models. They're cool.
You have the guy with the coat.
Yeah. No, probably not. But I'm really excited about that, and I've been reading through all the background and looking at the pictures and looking at the stats and points and things, and yeah, it looks really cool. I mean, I've had a flick through yours, you know, when you first got yours.
That would have been difficult. It was on my iPad.
Yeah,
so it would have been more like
a
swipe,
a swish.
Yeah,
swish. Sounds
I swished through your codex.
Yeah, yeah. Starting to sound a bit dirty there.
Swished from my codex.
I don't know. My head. Anyway,
it is a really nice one. Did you get the interactive version?
Yes.
So they're the ones that obviously you've got the photos. You can select make the photos.
Yeah,
make
them bigger. Scrolling boxes, highlight stuff.
Copy and paste.
Found that really useful for this episode, actually.
Yeah.
So I've got the Science Codex, which I'm really chuffed with, and it's the first interactive codex I've actually bought. Everything else is paper.
Yeah.
And I like having a main codex, but because this is like an allied force, and actually, I tell a lie, I bought the Assassin one as well.
What have I got now? I've got the Inquisitor kind of, one, the Scion one.
Probably got a few now.
I nearly bought the Blood Angel one as well. what else? And the Assassin one. I've got a few of the digital codex. I think for small detachments, I think you are right.
Yeah.
If they're not going to be a main army, like, I couldn't imagine doing my whole Blood Angel game
off of this, it would be
my iPad.
Nightmare, wouldn't it?
Not only is my iPad very rarely charged because I use it at work.
Yeah, that's true.
It's also, to flick between pages is a pain in the bottom.
Yeah.
Did I say bottom?
Yeah, the bottom's fine.
Pain in the bottom. So flip between the pages on it quickly. So if you're trying to check out what, say, your Sangarini Priest has got built with, it'll be a pain in the bottom.
Yeah.
I like the codexes.
Yeah, so I got that. I also picked up from the couple of things from the Advent calendar.
See, I haven't
Black Library.
I haven't been impressed with the Advent calendar.
Do you know what? I've looked back through it because I agreed with you. And there's some things on there that I don't want, but I could imagine being really good.
I preferred how they did it last year. So last year was more of a, they just published it and went, these are the book we're doing. Didn't have to go through the stupid open doors or...
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit... they've tried to make it more interactive, and in some ways it's more drawn out and long-winded. Like, to find out the amount of information you need to click, find out more and all that stuff. But, I mean, that doesn't bother me.
But they've also gone through their app as well, haven't they? So you can't go to the... straight to the Black Library to find out. You have to go through the app to find out what's recent.
No, I just go on the Black Library page.
Oh, man, I ignore it. I'm missing a trick.
Yeah, just go to blacklibrary.com and then just click on the Advent page and you're there.
Because last time it used to be a case of you went to iBooks and just went to iBooks, type in Games Workshop or Black Library and it came up
found
the
most
recent one. And I found that was really good for me because it was just so straightforward.
Yeah. You can still do that. I mean, the two that I got, I bought through iBooks and typed in their titles.
Right.
But I got them from the Black Library website.
What kind of price?
So I bought The Value of Fear, which is a Raven Guard and Night Lords heresy story.
Right, okay. And you're a massive Night Lord fan.
And yeah, I'm really into the Night Lords. I quite like the Raven Guard as well. Just, you know, on a side note, I wouldn't ever really think about collecting them or anything. But yeah, they're cool. I quite like what they're about. So yeah, I bought that book and it was 99p. It's like a really short story.
Can't really not like
it. And you know what? I read it and I really enjoyed it. And the Raven Guard's a boss in it. The Night Lord guy's really cool. And there's even a Primarch in it, which is cool. I like the Primarchs are always going to be cool, aren't they? So yeah, great value for 99p. They kind of got me on the data slate side. For today, I think it was. It was the Cryo Storm Altar of War mission.
Right, okay.
Which is basically an Altar of War mission where you're playing on a snow world, like a snow death world. And being a Space Wolf player, a massive Space Wolf fanboy, Fenris, snowy death world.
Snowy death!
So I was like, do you know what? I want that. I want to see what the mission's like and everything. £2.50 for one mission. It was a bit, and you know what, the ebook is not well done.
Right.
So there's no fancy pictures. There's just the map. There's a D66 table because it's got a special tactical objective table,
right, okay,
which is cool. But it's all just writing. There's no pictures. There's no even like, you know, in your codex you have the borders around the top, and even in the data slates it's all there, and
yeah,
it's just, this is just text on a white page.
Yeah, it's just the ebook format.
Someone's typed it up, and
would,
that's it.
Would you feel so bad if it was saying 99p?
No, I would have happily paid that. So I mean, I paid £2.50 to get it.
Yeah, but did you?
I would say
seen it.
For one mission, I would probably not pay £2.50.
Right. Okay.
That's my honest opinion. I've not
mission,
played it yet. Obviously,
for one mission, you're not going to play very often.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. That's why I'm trying to stay away from the data slates because unless they're particularly good value for money.
Yes. The thing I've liked this year, and this is one of my reflections on the Advent calendar, and go check it out if you haven't, blacklibrary.com, awesome. There are all the 40k novelists, and that's where you find all the awesome stories that build the background of this place and this universe. But yeah, they've done a couple of days where they've done a story, and then the data slate is a mission.
See, that's really cool because
that's,
it means you read
so
the story
cool.
And then you can go and actually
play the story out.
And that's kind of why I think the reason I'm so into 40k is because I can go and play those missions from my codex. So I can go and try out that scenario from a book I've read, regardless if it's not necessarily my armies. However,
yeah. No, I mean, I have to say I find Black Library novels dangerous because I finish them and go, right, now I'm doing an Imperial Fist army, or now I'm doing this army. Or...
That's just because you're too easily swayed.
I am. And to be fair, I haven't done that at all.
Buy me a Thunderhawk.
No.
I reckon it would work. I reckon next time you're on Forge World, you're going to go and click on Thunderhawk and you're going to buy me one.
I won't buy it, but I may look at it. I'm swayed, but I've got enough logic to stop. So, yeah. So anyway, so I bought those two things. And yeah, the Cryo Storm mission, probably a bit overpriced, but I'm going to play it and hopefully it's really fun. And it talks to me in that snow death world scenario. It's cool. And the Value of Fear ebook for 99p was amazing. And it's 10 pages, you know, probably not even 1,000 words because I'm doing it through an iPad mini. So, you know, it's quite small pages and it was a brilliant read. So yeah, check out the Advent calendar and see if there's stuff for your army. It's worth the risk for 99p. I mean, £2.50, if you've got the cash, you might think, screw it, why not? If you're struggling, then you might want to miss that. But yeah, definitely worth a look.
See, I was particularly tempted by the Blood Angels series that they brought out.
Yeah.
The only thing about it is I read the small...
There's a new one today.
Is there?
Well, Sanguinius. Harris. Heresy. It's $5.99 though, but it's a proper book. Like, it's a proper... I think it'll still be a short story, right, but it's a proper short story rather than like 1,000 words.
Right.
It's about Sanguinius. Well, it's got his name in it, so I'm assuming he appears somewhere.
Hopefully.
I haven't read any more of the details.
I may have to give that one a bit of a look-see.
Yeah. We love the Heresy. It's awesome.
It's not even the Heresy. I just really don't know. No. We're not getting into the joke. So, yeah, I had a look at them, and I just wasn't really impressed. I think the blurbs... I won't go and do the read an extract of it. I think that's really pants. So I'll just read the blurb. And the blurb is good enough. I'll buy it. I have no issue with buying stuff like 69p. Even 250 doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
But as long as it grips me.
Yeah, the little bit... I mean, I saw it was called... what is that little short story? The Value of Fear.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have... You know, it doesn't have a Raven Guard picture on it. It doesn't have a Night Lord's picture on it. I just saw it's got like an Aquila on the front page with like blood splattered on it.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, you know, it's a Heresy book. Let's see who it's about. Click. You know, a Night Lord teaches the Raven Guard the meaning of fear, etc., etc. I'm buying that book. You know, I didn't need an extract. I needed 10 words, and that was it. I was buying.
And absolutely, if there was a book about Sangarini Priest, that was kind of that sort of thing. I don't know, it just didn't really strike me. There were six books. One about Devastator, Assault Marine, Attack Marine. So they did the troops.
Yeah.
And none of it was just very much like, I must read this.
Yeah, so they seemed like they were there for Blood Angel release sake rather than here's a really cool story.
Yeah.
I get that feeling. I mean, when you come to buying a normal book, you know, what do? You don't turn to page 124 and read a random page.
Absolutely.
You read the back. You read the back and you look at the picture and you see who's in it. And if it grabs you, you buy it. So I do the same with this.
And
go and do it. And it's, you know, it'll take you 10 minutes to go through all the day so far. And there might be something there that you'll love and it might even inspire your hobby. So yeah, check out the advent calendar. Anyway, that's all the stuff I've bought. So that's pretty much all ebook and then one model. So yeah, I've been fairly restrained. Sam, why don't you tell us what you bought that isn't a model?
So I've been quite up on the books at the moment. So I bought the Blood Angel Codex that came out. I bought the Blood Angel Codex that came out. And at the same time, I was like, well, I'm buying something. I might try and get the free postage and packaging. So I bought the Sangarini Priest model. And then I was like, well, the Psycho cards might be kind of cool.
Oh, you need the cards, man.
So I got the Psycho cards as well. And then I looked at the dice and was just like, no.
Right. The thing about the dice, okay. And I'm not going to go on about
this.
No,
you are
going to
go on about this because
your issue. It doesn't make any sense, okay? Why would you have your chapter's logo, which you're going to want to see most on your dice, on the number one? Just think about that. If you're not doing an initiative test or a leadership test, you're never going to want to see those ones, ever. You're never going to want to see the logo of your army. It makes no flipping sense.
No, I completely agree. And after the stuff that happened with the Tyranid dice, where the picture that was in the White Dwarf showed
really...
Yeah, you
keep talking about that. I've not ever seen it. But,
not? Right. So yeah. After all of the... Okay, so what happened was when a guy on the Warhammer 40k page posted up a picture of the dice that he had...
On Facebook.
On the Facebook, yeah. And on the Facebook, on Facebook. And basically, the ones that he got were... kind of looked like all the edges had been filed down and it was rounded. It looked very much like a hornet without a sting or wings.
Oh, it's the classic Tyranid logo,
or
but badly.
The legs. Basically like a sausage, like a semicircle sausage. It was just not really that good. And the picture in the White Dwarf showed this really defined logo.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I really want to spend what?
You might have got a bad batch, you just don't know, do you?
But exactly, instantly stuff like that makes me want to not to do it.
I mean, they're
not
a dice company, you know. And if you're going to get it done, why would you go to GW? Why wouldn't you just get that logo?
There are so many websites out there that can go and do it for you. So many websites that can go do that for you. Get the logo and then just send it to them. But yes, I also looked at the Sanguinary Guard edition of the codex rather than just a normal one. It's £100 on Games Workshop. It's the limited edition one.
Is it still there?
It is still there.
No, that doesn't surprise me.
So basically, in the orcs, you've got the little tokens, the objective markers.
You did in really the Space Wolf ones as well.
And the Space Wolf one as well. And I fully was prepared to buy this special edition codex if required of me, if it had this kind of stuff. And all it gave you, so just I'm on the GW page now, and what it reads is, the 112-page full-colour hardback codex it contains background of the origin of Blood Angels, their chapter organisation, successor chapters, colour schemes and heraldry in the codex.
Yeah.
Details of the brand new Blood Angel successor chapters, these Carmen Blades, in the codex. An explanation of the most famous events and battles from the chapter's history in the codex. And so on. It's a description of all the units, characters available to Blood Angels in the codex.
Everything that's in the normal codex.
Everything that's on that list. So all that you get in that special edition is you get...
shiny pages.
No, not even shiny pages. You get...
Must be some gilding or something.
So the edge of the book is black.
Yeah. So gilded. Gilded so black.
Slightly...
Kind of cool.
Right, cool. Paying £100 for black. You get some prints.
Yeah.
Meh. For £100?
Yeah.
I can get them printed. it was just very much like there was nothing of that book.
Do you know what? They did the same for the Space... Sorry to cut you off. Okay. They do the same thing with the Space Wolves. There was two editions. Yeah. And I'm surprised we didn't see that for this. The high edition, the £150 one, just was six more prints than the £100 one. And was... let me think. And I think it had a gold page, like gold gilding around the edge rather than silver.
Yeah.
The Wolfguard edition, which was the £100 one, and I might be getting this slightly wrong because it was a while ago, was £100, came with the tokens like the first one did, the highest price did, had silver edged page in rather than gold, and it only came with six prints rather than 12.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to buy it, and it ran out while I was on the website. So I got the irregular codex. The £100 one I thought was, six prints, fine. Yeah, I could get them printed, but they're kind of cool. Yeah. The six tokens, really cool. That kind of stuff I love. I'm the sucker for the accessories.
And in the Blood Angel one, you get a painting guide as well.
Okay, yeah.
So you get it.
I think that was in the Space Wolf one as well.
So 176-page paperback painting guide. But I know how to paint my Blood Angels. I've been playing them for, 2-3 years now? Maybe 4 years, probably? I know how to paint.
Yeah, and I think,
my stuff.
Why put that on the really high one where collectors who have been around for a long time, who are going to be older, who are probably trying a lot more techniques than the 12, 15-year-olds, why is it only available to them in that pack? It actually should be something that's only available in the standard pack or something.
Yeah, and do you know what? If I go and want to know how to paint, say, a Tac Marine, I go to Striking Scorpion. Like he has painting guides on there when he's painting
He's a YouTube guy that you should check out. That's all you need to know.
So
Striking Scorpion 82.
He's got the painting guides on there. So why would I go and pay, 70 quid more for a book just to paint? And that's effectively what you're getting is a painting guide.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I'm really bitter about this.
Yeah, we need to move on. This is like a pain.
I got the Sangarinu priest model. I got the cards with the tactical objectives and the...
The Blood Angel Codex
and
itself.
The Psychic and the Codex itself. I also got today, I got an audiobook which is currently in my hands. It's called Heart of Rage by James Swallow. It could be good.
James Swallow is really good.
He wrote the other Blood Angel Codex, the other Blood Angel books, which got me listening to them. So, got me reading them, sorry. So, it could be really good. I saw it in GW when I was there today, and it's a new
you
one.
Just did it.
No, and I also bought the Agrax Earthshade. Irelin Earth? The crackling.
Oh, the cracking base stuff.
Yeah, from episode 2. I should know it.
Yeah, it was episode 2.
So I've got that. So I'm going to be doing that on the base around my Imperial Knight, along with some other transfers.
Yeah, that'll be really cool.
So that'll be quite a nice effect, hopefully.
All right. Well, let's move into building as we started talking about models there.
Have I bought anything else? No, I haven't bought anything else.
No. Just Blood Angel stuff, Blood Angel hype. You'll hear much more about that, I'm sure.
Oh, I bought books.
You bought books?
Yeah, I can read.
Go on then.
Oh, okay. So I bought Baneblade.
Oh, yes. Guy Haley.
Yeah, secretly because I want to have a Baneblade.
No.
Now.
Bad.
But it's
Bad Sam.
But it's a pretty model.
Bad Sam.
But it is a really nice model.
Just look at me. Don't be me.
No, I'm not going to be you because I won't buy it from Forge World. I'll buy it from Games Workshop. But slightly less and probably from the same printer. But no, cool. So I kind of want a Baneblade, so I bought the book. And also, I think it's Titanicus. Titanicus, is that how he's there?
No idea.
Titanicus?
Not seen it, not heard of it.
It's basically about Titans.
Oh, okay. Is it the Heresy story thing they released?
No, at the moment it's kind of, it sort of details the Titan. No, it's not Titan, is that the right word?
What, like a Reaver Titan or Emperor Titan or a Warlord Titan?
So it details the Titans and basically from the people on the ground's point of view of seeing these massive monstrous creatures and the people who are piloting them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I haven't started that one.
What are they called? They got a special Princeps.
Princeps, yep. Yeah. I haven't started it yet. I bought it on a whim because it was like 69p from iBooks. And that's when I was
ready yet. No, we'll hear about that next episode.
Yeah,
in the new year.
Hopefully.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hopefully I'm going to read that for the next one. I've got time off over Christmas. So
yeah, that's cool.
Got to do some stuff. Awesome, let's move on.
Let's move on to building. Right, you're making this hosting this show so much more difficult.
I'm not.
You are. Fine. Shush. Right, so building. I built the Carnifex, as I've already mentioned, on that new oval base. And yeah, the base is, I don't know, it just feels like it should be on a bigger base, but he looks cool.
Just buy a bigger base then.
The thing I like about Carnifex is he's glued on it. Can't be bothered with that. But the thing I like about Carnifex is you get about 5 or 6 head options.
Right.
And I couldn't decide on what one to go for. And I went for one that you don't really see.
So you magnetize them all?
No, I just glued one on.
pick it around and throw it in the middle. See what happens.
Yeah, just throw it and wherever it sticks, it's fine.
And that's how he has a head on his tail.
No, I use the head that has like 2 kind of antenna coming out of it. Because it's a DAC effects, which is the term that people throw out on the website.
Do you know, I only hear you say that.
Okay, it's generally out there. Generally, lots of people call them DAC effects.
This is a shoot effects.
Yeah, shoot effects. It's got the twin link devourers with brain leech worms. So it shoots 12 twin link shots at strength 6, AP 4, I believe.
I don't play Tyranids.
No, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So I wanted a head that looked kind of more intellectual, if you know what I mean.
So is it a brain bug?
Kind of, like it's got the antennas, like it's receiving the Hive Mind's orders a bit better. And whereas normal Carnifex, they have kind of armored heads with spikes coming off their chin and ready to wreck stuff. Whereas this is shooting things.
Whenever my Imperial Guard fight it, I'm going to shout, "We found a brain bug."
Yeah,
loudly, repeatedly.
I'd love it. That'd be awesome.
And then I'm going to stick it with an electrode.
Yeah, no.
Otherwise, his name is Pask.
Yeah, Pask with his Punisher.
Punisher Pask. Cool.
So I built the Carnifex, really happy with how he came out. I've used quite a lot of Forge World over this year now. I mean, we're not doing a year in review because better people than us do it.
We only had three episodes.
Yeah, exactly. But I've used Forge World over this year quite a lot. I mean, I've had Space Wolf Dreadnought, the Fire Raptor, Dimacheron. Stop it. Devourer arms that I've got from my Carnifex.
Your Fire Raptor?
Yes, fine. Still in its same stage it was 7 months ago.
Is it painted yet?
No.
Is it undercoated yet?
No.
Is it on a flying base yet?
The flying base is built.
Is it on it?
It can go on it.
Is it on it still? Where is it?
No, it's on my hobby desk. Still. Staring at me.
Put it on a base.
Yeah, there's tons of Tyranids in front of it.
So if you don't paint it by next week, I'm having that model.
No.
I can make it Blood Angels. This happened last time.
No, but I did it last time and I'm not.
You could do it.
No.
You've got time off over Christmas.
No, only like a week.
A week to paint it is plenty of time.
No, it's not for a model
painted my Imperial Knight in just about a week.
Yeah. It's not finished though.
Yeah, it's more finished than your Raptor.
Anyway, all right. I built a Carnifex, all right? Using the Forge World and putting the Forge World with the plastic was interesting, but worked okay. You know, just a little bit of tinkering to make it fit.
Cool.
And other than that, I've started converting my new Ragnar Blackmane. So last episode, I mentioned to you guys that I bought the Chrom Dragon Gaze model from the Stormclaw box set off of eBay to make a more imposing Ragnar Blackmane model, as he's the Wolf Lord of my company. And it's going really well. And now I just need to buy a large chainsword to convert rather than the axe that he's currently holding. And that'll be finished. And I'm really chuffed with it. It looks really good. So that's my building. Built anything?
I built my Imperial Knight.
Okay, cool. How was that?
You know what? Actually, it went together really well. The kit was...
Is any of it actually glued?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because it just moves everywhere.
Yes. No, it is glued. The legs are glued. For now. Before I put them little motors in them and make it walk. the legs are glued. It went, like I said, it went together really well.
Yeah.
It felt very much like, in order to make it unique, you'd have to start cutting at plastic.
Yeah.
It felt very much like...
It's pinned in places and things, isn't it?
We're not pinned yet. The only thing that needs to be... The beauty of the model is, there's a... Where the torso joins the legs is its own natural, like, ridge pin.
Yeah.
So you can put it on, you can balance it on. You don't actually have to glue it,
yeah.
Which is what I've done. The arms basically go on, twist down, and they basically lock into place.
That's really cool.
Will
they do that with the shoulders on?
The shoulders are on. I haven't tried taking them off yet. I don't think they will.
No, I don't think
However, they still move.
You've still got posability.
So, at the moment...
Is that a word, posability?
Posability is a word.
Cool.
You'll see it in, hopefully, the photos we're going to attach to the episode when it gets launched on... On Christmas Day. You'll see the model, and you'll see that it's fighting a Dreadnought.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or looking sort of like high-fiving with their swords.
Because we're cheese.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to have it being thrown by the Dreadnought was going to get thrown into battle
by
the Imperial Knight, or kicked.
But
so it went together really well, and
don't go into painting. I know you.
It was difficult having part four to weld and part plastic.
Oh yes, so you had the House Terran kit that I got you for your birthday.
Yeah. So what I found difficult was the amount of flash and stuff that was on it. So. I washed it first anyway, and then took a really stiff toothbrush to it to kind of get off the loose bits. And then I literally had to just sit there with a knife and just pick away the ridges.
I'm going to put this out there now. Next episode, Life in the Hobby section, using Forge World.
Well, you're the expert, so...
So that's what we'll do.
Well, I'll buy those Krieg models.
It'll be basic. It won't be no sandbed.
Yeah, we're not going to go to heaters and and sonic screwdrivers.
As a joke for all you that know who the ICs are.
But yeah, okay, I'll buy those Krieg models and we'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll put them together.
I think that'll be
it's
really
gonna
be cool.
Something to buy, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've used Forge World. That'll be a good thing to talk about. I think people are now buying more Forge World and adding it into their armies because people aren't really as suspicious of Forge World units anymore.
No.
Which is really cool because they've got awesome units. So yeah, that'll be a good episode for next week, next month.
So the shoulder pads came from Forge World, and it ended up that I put them together, sprayed them, started painting them, and realised there was a massive lump of flash that should have been a ridge. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to cut this away. So just stuck a knife in and scraped a little bit.
Yeah, you can do that. When you paint over that, you won't notice.
Mm, it's painted.
That's what I mean.
Now it's painted. I don't know where it is.
It's
on one of the shoulder pads. You'll have to see. So it's together. It's painted. I haven't done the transfers yet. I haven't
not into
it
painting.
Yet.
Stop it.
Oh, sorry. It's built.
What
Spoiler.
About anything else?
Do I build anything else?
I don't.
No. I'm trying to do this.
One
like
thing
Alcoholics
at a time.
Anonymous style painting
at
building.
One thing at a time. That's
one thing at a time. Try not to rush my hobby.
Yeah.
Although I really want to buy some Krieg. What have you built?
Right. Well, I've already done my building.
Attention. I was
painting. Let's go into painting.
So I've painted my Imperial Knight. As you may have heard already. And it actually came up really well, I think.
The photos look good. I haven't seen it in person yet. It still feels like it needs something extra. Your painting is a really good and quite high level compared to honest.
This is probably the Again, this is going to sound really big-headed. This is probably the best painted model I've got.
That's not big-headed. That's good. You should be proud of your stuff.
I've sort of busted out new techniques I don't normally do, like edge highlighting along where the ridges are, because it's blue. So I've painted it the traditional Terran colours.
Yeah.
And along all of like where the hatch doors are, where the ridges across the armour are, is blue. Around the edges of the armour and the gold is all lighter blue. What I've done is by doing the lighter blue, it sort of brings that... picks out the ridge a bit more, which is quite cool. And I used a gloss green on the door, on the hatch.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that it looks a little bit like glass reflecting this green.
Can you put any varnish over it?
Yeah, varnished it.
Oh, awesome.
Like it's coming out. And the gold probably was the hardest by doing like a three-step gold.
That's really good, though. It pays off.
Yeah.
It does pay off.
So I was really worried. The first, you do the, it's not...
Gehenna?
No, it's the brown. It's the brown with...
Oh, I know the one. Rhinox Oxide.
Yeah, possibly. Whatever.
That's the one I use for my gold. So I'm
basically,
assuming
it's like the brown with the reflective specs in it.
Possibly.
Anyway, so I used that, and then when he painted the gold over the top, it came out really thin, yeah, and streaky, and I was really worried that it was going to mess up this model.
Look awful, yeah.
And then just put a couple more layers on, and it's not too bad.
I think that's the thing. Thin layers for metallics really work.
Yeah, build up layers rather than...
Because they're really watery, and I guess they need to be, just to get that metallic look. I don't know. The consistency always seems a bit more watery.
Yeah.
In the pots. So, yeah. No, it looks good in the photos. Like I say, I think it needs some battle damage or maybe some weathering.
See, I don't know
once
what
it's
I'm
based
do.
As well. Like, a base adds so much to a model.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do, and this is going to probably make me throw them all out the window, is I'm going to spray the feet with army painter. Very, very light dusting.
I can't believe you just said that.
Very, very light dusting.
So
what I want to achieve is to be from, say, the feet to the ankles
dusty.
Being dusty. But I don't...
Weathering powders.
I don't know how to use weathering powders.
Yeah, but you can practice on your practice vehicle and get it good and then do it on your night.
Like, do I... They're obviously powder, like talcum powder.
Yeah, they're a bit more sandy than
that. So do you sprinkle it on like you're putting pepper on a chips?
From understanding it, I think you pretty much like paint it on. You just get a wet brush, dip it in and paint it on.
And then how do you seal it? Because that must come off, surely.
I'm assuming you matte varnish the whole model.
See, I don't want to... I bought some matte varnish and I am so scared that if I spray it on, it's going
to
go...
Ruin it
like,
and then
foggy.
Have to start again.
And I am not starting again. I'd rather it look pristine and like it's just come out of a factory than cloudy.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, you could do the dusting. You just got to be so careful.
Yeah.
Because you can... Again, you put too much on, and if it looks too flat, you might need to spray it and then maybe do some washing to make it look a bit more something. I don't know.
This is going to be something that I'm going to need to look at.
Yeah, and well, we'll hear back on it. Let's not talk or speculate.
I'm looking forward to the base, though. You're using the crackling mud thing.
That'll be cool. That'll be cool. Again, you're going to do a tester?
I watched a couple of videos on it. It seems like the thicker you do it, the more the cracks are, but you can't do it too thick, otherwise it will just come off the base.
Yeah.
So it's that happy medium, but you shouldn't do it too thin because it would too...
It just won't work.
So I'm thinking painting it thicker near the feet.
Yeah, really thick by the feet, I would say.
And then basically go out and thin it out. Like a mini pyramid type thing.
Yeah.
Just so it's sticking, the cracks are thicker, obviously, where it's standing, and then...
Yeah. It's like the ground around it is breaking up because it's so heavy.
And I'm thinking about getting some of the rocks I used on my Scions. Putting some rocks on it as well and spraying them brown.
Yeah.
And also putting some sand on it. So basically it's a sand, mud, rock, a bit of grass type thing.
Desert-y kind of thing.
Yeah.
That matches your realm, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So what I struggle with is I hate it when people put massive bits of scenery, like walls or bits of terrain on bases. It really winds me up. In fact, actually, that's going to be my pain.
No,
so I will hold
off. I preferred your other one.
No.
All right. Well, we can change things. All right. Well, painting then, for me.
Yeah.
Because you've talked about your night. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, there is one other thing that's made me laugh a lot this month.
Oh, no, see, that's not fair. So I was playing Mark, and then I was playing him with my new guard, and I got them all out of the box, put them next to each other, and realised they weren't quite the right shade. They don't all match. Yeah.
So your two wyverns.
So my Pask model and my Hellhound match. They are washed with... Syrian, no. Cyan. It's the ready wash, basically, red.
It's a ready fleshy wash, isn't it? It's not like the bright red one.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. It's not a problem. But they're done in that, so it gives them a kind of ready tinge to them.
And they come out, it's come out really nice.
They look nice.
The fade between the light brown and the brown, sorry, the sand colour and the brown that I've got comes out really nice with them.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
And... My wyverns are washed with...
I know this one.
Go on then.
Seraphim Sepia.
Yeah, so they're more of a brown.
That is a brown.
Than a red. So they look slightly different to what I thought they would. So they're wrong.
Yeah, so...
Pretty wrong.
Do you know how you're going to fix that yet?
Well, there's two options.
Start again.
I throw them out the window and buy more models.
No.
Second option is I strip them.
Yeah.
Put them in a vat of Dettol.
And start again.
And start again.
Yeah.
Not really my favourite idea. Yeah. Or using painter's masking tape, mask off all the tracks and the platforms. I'm not too worried about the guns because the guns are easy to do.
Yeah.
And
spray it again.
And basically re-spray it.
No, I just wash over the top.
It's so not going to work. I can't just wash it over the red.
But let's face it, if you do it and it works, you've saved yourself a lot of work.
Right.
If you do it and it doesn't work, you're going to do one of the others anyway.
So most likely throw them out the window. I will try the red first and just wash it.
Just try on one of them.
And then when that doesn't work, I will...
Because they've only got a time in enough. Like, they're not even going to be anywhere near each other.
No, it's one of those things that I will know. And if I know it, then...
Well, we all know it now.
Well, yeah, okay. The rest of the people that listen to the podcast know it. You know it. I know it. And it will be noticeable. And
it. You haven't done it yet.
And I will probably have to
buy
new
bottles. Come on, man. You're the positive one.
I am the positive one. Come on. It really, really wound me up. They looked really nice. And on the gun platform part, I painted... this is why I want to cover them with masking tape and not spray over it completely or strip it. Because I painted on a radar... Like the screen's little blips, and it looked so good.
Yeah.
Or as good as I thought it could get. And now it's wrong.
Yeah.
And now it's not the right colour.
I guess here's a tip for you guys out there.
Paint from another model.
No. Well, paint from another model, or if you're doing a complex paint job that's got lots of stages, write down those stages. And eventually you'll get it into your head. But, like, you know, this is a new army for you and it was only the third vehicle you'd done.
Fourth.
And it was a bit of space in between the two and you got one wash wrong and it has made a difference.
Do you know what? When I was painting it on, I was thinking, this doesn't look right.
Why didn't you go and get
that point,
one?
I should have gone and got one.
Yeah, okay. No sympathy now. Don't care. Right. On
you have
to
no
me.
Sympathy anyway.
No, do you know what? The first thing I did when you sent me a photo when you were at Wayland playing Mark, just saying,
spot the difference.
Spot the difference or something. And man, I fully just burst into laughter. And I can't even remember where I was. I was somewhere where I probably shouldn't have been laughing. And it was so funny.
It wasn't funny.
I still find it funny, but I hope you fix it. I do. As your friend, I hope you fix it. Anyway, enough of my bullying, I guess. I've based my Dimacheron with the Inky by Darkness. It's going strong. The sprays that Sam got me for my birthday. So they've worked really well.
So you've painted it?
It's been based.
Really?
Yeah, it's all built. Wow. Mould lines gone. This thing, I'm kind of trying to concentrate and painting.
How did you get rid of the mold lines?
Not a blowtorch. Damn it, why did that come up again? We'll talk about it next episode.
Can we call this episode Damn It Blowtorch 2?
No.
Like the sequel.
Return of Blowtorch.
Return of the fire.
Yeah. No. But we'll talk about how I did that in the next episode if we're doing Forge World.
Yes, Forge World. Right, okay. So
I've, I did the building, got rid of mould lines, etc., etc.
When we do the next recording, can you bring the model with you?
Yeah, sure.
Because I've never actually seen it.
You've never seen it.
And it'd be really interesting to see it.
Yeah. I based it and I've got the first layer of skin done on it as well. So it's caught up with the rest of my force pretty much. Other than that, I mean, I've been really struggling with painting. I've been in a really buy and build mood. And it didn't help when I bought the Scion Codex, read it, made my list, and was like, right, now I know what I need to buy. It took so much self-control just not to buy them. And I'm sure that self-control will give in fairly soon.
Soon enough.
Yeah, soon enough. That's what I was trying to say.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I was trying to say fairly soon and soon enough. Mix up of words. Can't speak tonight.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
It's only 11:30.
Yeah, no, it's not good, is it? Anyway. So, yeah, my painting has really slowed down. I've done a bit of dry brushing for the second layer of skin. So I've got some gene stealers ready to go on that. But obviously a lot more of the army to do. Now I've got Carnifex to base and catch up as well. So it just doesn't feel like it's really moving. And that's the problem with conveyor belt painting. When you're painting your whole army in stages, it sometimes doesn't feel like it's moving quick enough. And that's really affected my motivation. And I'm probably going to need to pick a new paint because I've just talked about it completely now.
We need to have a game. I think a game of them will do it.
Yeah, it'll revitalize them. That's why I took the orcs to the Overlords event.
Because
I wanted them to pick me up. But again, jumping forwards.
Right, so we're organizing a game for between Christmas.
We'll try. Yeah, we said we'd try and get a game in. I think, to be honest, I think I challenged you with my Space Wolves, but I'm happy to change that to Nids and you can try out your new Blood Angels.
I will try out my Blood Angels.
That'll be really cool. Lots so you try out your Blood Angels. I'll bring Nids to try and
bring your Diamond Carrier.
Get that going. Yeah, that'll be cool. Yeah, it's in bits though, so I'd have to like put it together.
Oh no, do work.
No, what's but it's in bits because I want to paint it and do it justice.
Have you pinned it?
No, not yet. It's all in bits.
You blue tack. Blue tack will work.
Yeah, I could blue tack it together. But anyway, so yeah, that's my painting really based the Dima Charon. Dima Charon. I said Dima, that's the problem. Dima Charon. And yeah, I've just been slow on the conveyor belt and it's been sad times for me for painting. You got any other? I think we've done painting to death, really, haven't we?
Yeah, I what I want to do is try and repaint my Blood Angels, all of them, all 8,000. Well, all was 8,000 points. I haven't pointed them up yet.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting.
Because a lot of things have dropped.
Yeah, well, I mean, every codex, that's what's happening, isn't it?
Yeah. When do you want to talk about the codex?
Maybe after games, just before we move into our next section.
Cool.
Okay, so games this month. Lemon hell. So, games this month. I've got one game other than the event that we went to at the Overlords.
I too have one game other than...
So what we're doing, we might as well tell you now, is our joys this week, this month, have been connected together. And we're both going to share, because we enjoyed it so much, we're going to talk about the Overlords Christmas party, naughty or nice, doubles. I don't want to call it a tournament. It was a day of fun games. And we're going to talk about that in our joy section in the next segment of the podcast. So we're going to skip those games, but let's talk about our games now. Do you want to go first?
No, you can go first. You can go.
Okay, fine. So I had a game with Imperial Fist Ben.
Hey, Imperial Fist Ben.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing on Imperial Fist Ben. Last month, it may have sounded like I was accusing him of making other people not want to come to our gaming group. And he picked me up on this, actually picked both of us up in the group chat. That was not the case. Nobody dislikes Imperial Fist Ben. He just doesn't turn up. But the point I was trying to make is that Imperial Fist Ben...
he's working a lot.
Yeah, Imperial Fist Ben chooses to work on Saturdays, which means he can't come to the bunker. So I didn't mean it. I'm apologising on air and quit your job.
No, he works for me. I just realised that. No, but yeah, we started our campaign. So one of the things I've been putting in place with both Neil, who plays Crimson Fists.
Crimson Fist Neil?
No, just Neil. There's only one of him, so that's fine.
At the moment.
At the moment, yeah. And with Imperial Fist Ben. And the idea being that my Nids, my High Fleet, have basically all but consumed a world, which the Imperial Fists are replying to. They're coming to kind of take back before they completely lose it. Hold the Nids up at least, just stop this threat. But while that's going on, Gene Stealer cult has kind of infested a world that's close by, that's a recruitment world for the Crimson Fists. So we're kind of having a in tandem campaign. So for me and Neil, we'll be playing, and me and Ben will be playing, and that will affect each other's story. So it's quite complicated, but it's quite exciting. And me and Ben have played our first game. And it was really cool. It was 1,000 points. Was it 1,000 points?
Yeah,
it must have been, thinking about what I took. So I had my Flying Hive Tyrant as my warlord with Twin Ink Devourers. I had a Morlock, and then I had 3 or 4 squads of 10 Gene Stealers and one with a Broodlord. And the idea was that the Imperial Fists were in orbit of this planet that's infested with Tyranids, and they'd found a area of land that was hardly touched, and in that land was an ammunition store, which is one of the pieces of scenery that I've got. It's quite a good centerpiece that I got from...
hang on, this is the game that I FaceTimed you while I was at work.
Yeah.
I sat there and watched it for a bit.
Yeah, so I'll get to that. That was really funny. But yeah, so he deployed his sniper scout squad, who had come down first to secure and scout out the area and make sure there's not too much of a threat there. And then they sent down a squad of Devastators with las cannons for the fact that if a Tyranid monstrous creature turned up, the snipers might not be able to do the job.
Right.
And then everything else was three squads of tactical marines in drop pods. And he was bringing Sergeant Garadon, who's a character from the Sentinels of Terror data slate that he runs, his Imperial Fists as. So that was really cool. And they were all coming down in drop pods. So they started off the board. And the deployment we came up with, we basically altered a mission from the Sentinels of Terror, which was Imperial Fists versus Nids. And in the original mission, it was the last stand of the Imperial Fists. We turned it on its head and turned it into, this is like the first stand of the Imperial Fists. So they were going to secure this area, scout it out, send down the tactical squads to have a more of a force. And then the idea was if he won, he could then deploy most of his forces on the ground safely. If the Tyranids then, you know, picking up their scent and picking up that there's something going on, took them out and they couldn't hold this area on this mission, then him landing his troops in the second mission would be really affected because the Nids know something's up.
Mm.
So what we did is he deployed on the ammunition store with his scout snipers and his Devastators, and I had Gene Stealers in their broods all the way around him with, I think it was 18 inches apart, which was the mission deployment. My Hive Tyrant and my Morlock were off the board. And again, this was to example that the Tyranids had picked up that there was a threat and the Gene Stealers were closest, so they were just starting to swarm the area and nothing else had got there yet.
Right.
And eventually the flying Hive Tyrant will turn up and the Morlock will burrow from the ground following the scent of the Gene Stealers, knowing there's something going on.
Did Ben get any advantages?
He basically had, if he ever fell back, he'd fall back to the centre point.
Right.
And what we had is we had one objective in the centre point, which was a like radio emitter, one of the other kind of bits of scenery that I've built out of odds and ends to create a kind of radio tower. And they'd set that up so they could send messages to, what are they called? To the fleet up in space. And at the time of him holding that, then I think his drop pods wouldn't scatter or something. I think we actually forgot that rule, but we kind of came up with that at the beginning. So he had that benefit. But other than that, not really.
Right.
And basically first turn, my Gene Stealers just moved and ran because I couldn't get anything within charge range. It was a 12-inch charge, and I'd take Overwatch, and I just thought, if I get close, then I'll be okay. What we also had in plays, his drop pods couldn't come in turn one like normal.
Right, okay.
So normally the drop pods have a rule where half of them can come in from turn one, half of them rounding up, and he had three, so he could have brought two in. But what we wanted is it to be a bit of a desperate situation, and then the heroes come in. And it really worked. It gave a really good atmosphere to the game, because second turn came about, I'd lost a few Gene Stealers from shooting, and my Gene Stealer squad with the Broodlord got into combat and ripped apart his scouts. They just completely died. But his Devastators were still there.
Right.
And then his turn two, two out of three of his drop pods came in. So they came in and I completely lost, other than a Broodlord on one wound, his 10 Gene Stealers. And I lost another 10 Gene Stealers. Also on the board, sorry, I forgot about this. Ben brought a Dreadnought, who they'd also put on the planet straight away.
Right.
Again, they thought, you know, send Devastator squad, send a Dreadnought, and send the scouts who can scout out the surrounding area, and then bring the troops in after.
Yeah.
Which, for the Tyranids, is probably quite a good thing. And it was an ironclad Dreadnought with two flamers, so it was built for Horde or the big monstrous creatures.
Yeah.
So that was cool. They got into combat he got into combat with a squad of Gene Stealers, and basically the Gene Stealers could only hurt him with the rending and getting lucky rolls. So it tied up that squad for a couple of turns, and they eventually died. So I had one squad of Gene Stealers left and a Broodlord at the end of turn two. And I was like, man, I'm not going to survive this. And then my Morlock came up and scattered off, so I didn't actually do any damage on any troops. It just deployed on the board from like deep strike, its burrow attack. So I was like, oh no. And then, to be honest, my hero of the game, my Flying Hive Tyrant, flew on the board because I could come in from any table edge, because all of them counted as mine, basically. And they came in and shot the Devastators to pieces. And the reason that was really important was that they were the only weapons that could really hurt the Hive Tyrant or the Morlock. Now, Bolters could wound on sixes, but it's sixes.
Yeah, but he was playing Imperial Fists.
Yeah, so they got rerolls, and you know, it wasn't like he was completely screwed, and he still had a Dreadnought on the board that could easily punch them to death. Because actually, because of the new way Smash works now in the 7th Ed rulebook, Dreadnoughts are actually got an upper hand to monstrous creatures now, which is a bit of a shame, but I kind of understand it. Anyway, side point. what ended up happening, like, we just had a couple of turns of just killing each other. I lost my Gene Stealers, got into combat, killed a tactical squad, and then got absolutely annihilated through Bolt of Fire. My Morlock was on one wound, and then on the last turn got shot down by Bolt of Fire. My Hive Tyrant had got around the back of his Dreadnought and blown up his Dreadnought. And then I think before it did that, it killed Sergeant Garrodon and most of his squad, because the Hive Tyrant shooting is so good with the Twin Link Devourers. The idea is that you have 12 Twin Link shots at strength 6. So if you're shooting Marines, you're hitting on 3s, because it's BS4 for the Hive Tyrant, re-rolling. So you hit 10, 11 out of 12 on average. And then you're wounded on 2s. So you're getting like 10 wounds at a time, and it doesn't matter if you've got a 3-plus save, you're going to fail some. And he got really unlucky with Lookout Sirs, and that's how he lost Sergeant Garrodon. So I had a Warlord kill, which was brilliant. The interesting thing in the game is I was losing wounds, he was losing models. And it went that way, and we went all the way to turn 7. And what was actually left is my Hive Tyrant was on 1 or 2 wounds on top of the ammunition store on the objective in combat with 3 tactical marines. If it went on to turn 8, I would have probably killed the 3 tactical marines and won. But the game ended. So what we decided, and because this was a narrative game and the start of our campaign, we decided at this point the marines had held up long enough of reinforcements to come down. So my Hive Tyrant, seeing this, flew away so it wouldn't die.
Yeah.
You know, to lick its wounds and come back. So the Imperial Fists won out the day. They held strong, held their position, and now we're starting to prep for game 2.
Cool, good.
And it was a really fun game. I mean, other than the fact that you rung me, FaceTimed me at work. That was really fun.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I meant as well as. Yeah. That's what I probably
good.
Meant. But yeah, so we set up the my iPhone kind of up against a hill or something, so you could see a part of the battlefield. That was the early game.
Mm.
And we were chatting about, I think, was it Blood Angel rumours?
Yeah.
Probably. And me and Ben were playing, and it was quite fun. But yeah, I really enjoyed the game. Loved the fact that it was narrative, and we were creating a story, and it felt that way, and it mattered more when you lost stuff.
Yeah.
It was really cool that it had that vibe about it that normal games just don't. So I really, really enjoyed that, and we're hopeful, again, I'm trying not to book too many games in that 1 week because I know I won't be able to commit to them all.
Mm.
But he really wants to do the second game already, so that's really encouraging.
Yeah.
And he's even started painting models. Cool. Yes, Imperial Fist Ben.
Yes. So my game was against Mark. We played at Wayland Games. It was I think it was 2,000 points. See, it really annoys me. I wrote all this down on my iPad and it's not there. So I think it was 2,000 points. I did, under true Games Workshop requirements and I went completely unbound and took my Imperial Knight, a squad of an Inquisition squad, a Vindicare Assassin, and Guardsmen. So I took Pask with 2 Wyverns and a Vet squad with a Hellhound. Mark took 30k. Is it Emperor's Children?
Yes, they were. I think you were playing 1750, if I remember seeing the list.
If, whatever way. 1750, 2k. I was probably paying 2k. He was probably paying 1750. played his 30k. See, he messaged me before, and Mark's really fair in the respect, and said, well, this is what I get. You can have squads of 30 Marines if you want, and sort of basically gave me every ability that he could do. But I was like, well, I want to test out some stuff. In hindsight, I probably wouldn't have gone so sporadic and chose loads of different armies just because it was a nightmare trying to flip between the Inquisition Codex, yeah. the Imperial Knight Codex, and the Assassin's Codex on my tablet, on my iPad. On my iPad, there we go. A bit of a nightmare, but it was a good game. I lost in the end, but I got to see the Imperial Knight. Basically, the Imperial Knight doesn't do good against Terminators with chain fists.
yeah, that's not surprising.
Although he did explode and kill them all, so it's fine.
Oh, that's pretty good. Well,
I think one survived under the corpses of his brethren. One survived, and I learned really the capability of it, and to be honest, it wasn't painted at the time, so that's probably why it died.
Yeah, painted models always do better.
Yeah. We played the Maelstrom games, and it was all right. I started on the first three cards I drew. I was already on those objectives anyway, so it sort of it served me right.
Oh, yeah.
And now I've got Blood Angel specific ones. I think I'll probably play them with that. I don't really enjoy those types of games anyway. I'd rather just kill the enemy, to be honest.
I found that I really prefer playing the normal type missions, the Eternal War missions. But Maelstrom's really nice palate cleanser.
Yeah.
It's just different if you do it. Every now and again, it's a different type of game, and you can have fun with it. I don't tend to play it that often because I think otherwise it becomes stale, and the randomness can be a bit too annoying. I'm all for the randomness. I love that about 40K, that you can't just X, Y equals Z. Like, it doesn't work that way because you can roll ones or you can draw bad cards or whatever. Mm. But I wouldn't want to do that all the time. I think it would get me down because you're just lucky on a deck.
Yeah. I think the game definitely taught me to try and pick either from one army or just one detachment, and really just it wasn't not fun. It was just really, really, really crazy with the amount of stuff I had. So I think I just definitely
you were doing like four or three, weren't you?
One, two, three, four. Yeah, so four. So it's more of a I've just got to think I want to use my Imperial Knight more with my Blood Angels. If I can, just get more practice with him. I definitely think he's a difficult model to play, difficult one to play. But yeah, it was good.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so like I said, we're going to talk about the Overlords missions in the next segment, which we're pretty much at. The one thing I wanted to mention is me and Ben came up with an adaptation of a character death table that we've seen on various battle reports online. So the idea being that if a character dies in the game, whether it's a sergeant who's named or Sergeant Garrodon himself, who's his warlord, or the Dreadnought, because his Dreadnought's got a name. Can't remember, brother something or other. I don't know. Sorry, Ben, I didn't write that down. We came up with a little table, and it's quite cool. My Broodlord, because it was instant killed, just died, because of the rolls. But the idea is that...
So what is it, if you cause a wound on him, you roll on the table?
No, if the character dies in the battle...
Right.
So he's completely removed from the game because he's been killed.
Right.
And it basically, you roll a dice and you get a result. So yeah, it's a D6 table, and 1 to 3 is a minor wound, 4 to 6 is a major wound, a 7 plus is a character kill, so your standard characters, so sergeants, non-important characters, and then very important characters, like your named individuals. If you were bringing Mephiston, he'd be a very important character, of course. You need a 9+.
Okay.
Now, obviously, on a D6, you can't get a 9, but there's potential bonuses. So if you're instantly killed, you +3 to your result.
Right, okay.
So if you roll a 6, +3, 9.
Right, okay.
And then you're a very important character is squished and you can't blame for the rest of the campaign.
Oh,
yeah? So it's
supposed
to be very hard to...
So this is if you're playing a campaign... You'd use this table. So it's not in yours normal game, we wouldn't use it.
No. So it's built purely for the campaign that we're running.
Oh.
Because it's going to have the same characters in games. So we have a +3 modifier if you're instantly killed. So you still have to roll a 6 to then it be a 9. That's the thing. Mm. You also +1 to the result if you lost the game. So if you're instantly killed and you lost, it would be a +4 to your roll. But you -1 if you win. My Broodlord was killed by the Dreadnought because it was just an important character, so I only needed a 7+. And I was already adding 3 and a loss, so I was adding 4 to my roll to get a 7+ on a D6. So, yeah, I rolled and he got squished. So that Broodlord's not coming back. There'll be a different Broodlord, but because Nids, it's kind of a bit hard. You don't have any named characters like Space Marines or Imperial Guard or anything. So, yeah, we were going to kind of see if the Broodlord or the Hive Tyrant, for example, will keep coming back as the same one. And then the Broodlord died and the Hive Tyrant got away. So I was fine. So this is what a minor or a major does. So if you're minorly wounded, you lose -1 to your weapon skill, ballistic skill, and wound characteristic. If you're a one-wound character, then you just ignore the wound. But yeah, -1 weapon skill and ballistic skill and a wound if you've got multiple wounds. A major is -1 to all characteristics. They don't go away until you play another game with that character. You can choose not to, but you have to play a game with that stat once.
Right.
Then if you survive, they go away and he goes back to normal. Both of Ben's characters, his Dreadnought and Sergeant Garrodon, who both died in the battle, are both minorly wounded for the next game.
Right.
Because that was how he rolled.
How does that work for Dreadnought?
For a Dreadnought, so they still have a weapon skill and a ballistic skill.
No, but in terms of armor.
The wound, we took off a whole point.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, so he's going to be a little bit more fragile than he was. And then if he survives the next game, then great. If he dies again, then he's already minorly wounded, so you +1 again.
Mm.
If you're majorly wounded, you +2.
Right.
So it becomes, you get hurt, more and more hurt, so you're more and more likely to die. But actually, if you can pull it off that you stay alive, then you'll have enough time to heal or get repaired.
Right. So where's the bonuses then? So like, what if I survive, do I gain a weapon skill?
No. If you survive, you're still the badass character you were.
Right.
You're starting stat line.
Okay.
Because otherwise it could get
crazy. I think it's cool that you've come up with that for your campaign.
So he had a sergeant who survived the whole game and killed the Morlock with a power fist.
Yeah.
So he's now going to get a name and become a character.
Right. Okay, cool.
You know, you're just telling a story and increasing or decreasing. You know, if Garrodon got instant killed, you can't write a named character in the 40K background completely out.
No.
Unless you're never going to play him again.
Yeah.
But you can write him out of a campaign because he's too hurt to carry on and someone else has to take over.
Cool.
So, yeah. And that's all I had to say about that. We're going to take a quick break because we've been going for a while and be right back with our first segment. Second segment. Hey guys, it's Matt here. If you want to be involved in this awesome community, if you want to have input into the show and what we cover, then please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheAdeptusTerror podcast. Thanks a lot and see you soon.
Let's all go to Facebook. Let's all go to Facebook. Let's all go to Facebook and give that page a like.
Well, welcome back. This is our second segment of the show. This is our pain and joy of 40K, when we share a little bit about what we're struggling with and what we're really enjoying. As we've already said, this episode we're going to combine our joys together, talk about the Overlords Doubles event, because it's quite a lot to talk about. So... it seemed the best place because we enjoyed it so much that it fits our joys. So we're going to shoot through our pains first, if that's cool with you, Sam.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then we'll talk about the Overlords and how awesome it was. My pain, I shared it in the first segment, really, so I'll be quick, was a lack of motivation in my painting. You know, I'm trying this conveyor belt method, and it is having a good effect, but I just find it really hard to pick up a brush and do it. I'd rather build something, or frankly, I'd rather play on my Xbox or watch a film. I'm finding it really hard to get that motivation, that oomph.
So do you reckon it would help if you instigated the can't play it unless it's painted rule again?
Possibly, yes. I think if I did that, I'd have to go to a unit by unit basis.
Because I know, obviously, it's not a big army, but when you're doing Space Wolves...
What's
that, like, 2K?
But that's like over 100 models.
Yeah, okay, no. What I mean is it's not a big force, as in you've got 6K to play to
Yeah, that's
from.
True, yeah.
So in a 2K
It'll make format, me paint, yeah.
Yeah, so in a 2K format, it means that you can't have a 1,500-point game because you've only got 1,000 points painted.
Yeah, the only problem with that is then I'm just going to get down on gaming because I won't play.
But
it might
got,
force me to play my
but,
Space Wars.
But you've got, like, what, 2 other armies?
You've got
1,000 points of orcs, and you've got 6K worth of...
But the problem is the orcs thing has a set rule, and we're not pushing that.
No.
And so I'm bored of playing my orcs, and that's why I took them to the Overlords.
Yeah.
Because
I
was like... And I had such a blast playing them.
Yeah.
And I thought that I'd get home and be like, oh, yeah, let's paint my orcs and let's get this moving. And I don't even have the motivation for that right now. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I just don't want to paint. I think the thing is, I've always struggled with painting. I really like the end effect, and I really like doing it. When I'm actually doing it, I enjoy it. But the thought of it,
it's the pushing yourself to go and do it. So I really struggle going, right, okay, I've now got 2 hours before I'm going to go to bed. Let's do some painting.
Yeah.
By the time I get everything out and set myself up, then it's like,
it's easier to turn the Xbox on.
It's easy. Well, yeah.
That's the problem. That's why I'm up to at the moment. I'm playing a lot of Destiny, and I'm really enjoying that. But it's taken away my hobby time.
See,
definitely.
It's not even that for me. I painted my night when I went and looked after my parents' house for the weekend.
Yeah.
Because like, I had that time and I was
spare
on my own.
Time.
But it was like my weeks are so busy at the moment just because I'm making them busy by doing stuff. So like I'm doing the show tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. So that's no painting then. Monday, I'm probably going to want to relax, probably go up to Wayland to pick up some primer.
Yeah.
So at least that's something towards a hobby. Then you're already talking Tuesday.
Well, then you're nearly into Christmas.
Nearly into Christmas. And
which,
then,
you know, it's family time, et cetera, et cetera.
Whoa. Family. Yeah.
And like you say, actually booking in games, which is what we're trying to do, is awesome. And we'll have a lot to talk about in that area. But if you're gaming, you can't be painting. And I'd rather be gaming than painting, definitely. You know?
Do you think, though, that you make the excuse to not paint when you actually probably could? So on like Monday, when you have your day off, you could have painted.
Well, not this Monday. I couldn't have done because I had lots going on.
Okay, but on a normal Monday.
Oh yeah, fully. I definitely know. I go into the room and I sit at the desk, and I've got my whole NID army is out on the desk because I don't have any cases for it right now.
Yeah, and that's the issue.
It's out there, and I'm like, right, this needs to move, and then I literally get a brush out, get the paint pot out that I need, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. This doesn't seem fun. I put it down and I'll go and do something that I want to do.
Maybe that's the issue, though. Maybe because your army's on your desk, it's not like a, right, I've got this unit on my desk, I'll paint this unit, and I'm done. It's a, I've got this whole army on my desk, I'm not going to finish it today, so why do I want to start?
Yeah, and that's the problem with conveyor belt painting.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't enjoy painting that way, but I kind of, I don't know, I might try and get them all dry brushed on the skin, so the basic skin layers are done, and then go, right, this unit, I think that might help me and go back to the unit setup. I think conveyor belt painting has really helped. Like, my whole army is that Incubi Darkness green.
Yeah.
So it's not grey, it's not even black or white, it's a colour.
Yeah.
And I've deployed it once like that, and it looks almost like an army. You know, it looks unfinished, of course it does, but it looks much more like an army. And if I can get the skin layers all to that and then slowly paint unit by unit, I think that might help.
Perhaps you should move them off of your desk and put them on the top of your bookshelf.
On my nowhere.
Bookshelf?
Yeah, there's a little bit of space.
Put them in a box?
Yeah, I'm just worried about having now started painting them, putting them in boxes. Like, I haven't been moving them down for the bunker, bringing them out there, because I don't want to put them in a box and I'm rattling around and scratching.
But
so I did that, and one of my jeans tears I had to completely repaint, because it just got scratched to pieces.
But don't... I'm not saying put it in a box and start shaking it like a Polaroid picture.
Yeah, obviously.
Just put it in a box and just tuck it on top of a shelf.
Yeah, but you got the thing about NIDs is they're not rounded. They're sharp. They're spiky. I'm just not willing to do that. Like, genuinely,
you need to paint them.
I need to buy foam as well. Yeah. When they're painted, they're not moving.
They do an Imperial Knight foam.
Yeah,
I did that today.
Custom foam. Check out last episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my pain. I've just been really struggling to paint. It might pick up over Christmas when I have that week off, and Jenny might want to go and do some scrapbooking, which is kind of the thing she's started doing, which is really cool. Or she might go and see her friends that she doesn't get to see that often.
So rather than seeing your friends, you go and meet your other friends, your NIDs.
Yeah, go paint and
them.
Paint.
Just paint them.
Yeah.
We'll do a painting day.
That would be really cool. Yeah, maybe we should do that. Painting day with a game at the end.
Yeah.
And you have to have painted a full unit before you can play.
Full army.
No, full army. That's not going to happen. Not going to happen. But so, yeah, that's been my pain.
So my pain has been around around the Blood Angels. Massively annoying. I just really hate it when people bust out rumours on like Facebook and on forums.
I've just realised that we haven't actually talked anything about the Blood Angel Codex at all.
That's fine, we can wait. Yeah. So what really annoys me is when people on forums and on Facebook pages and stuff get really ranty and get really upset over something they haven't actually seen yet. Before the Blood Angel Codex came out, okay, there were some leaked pictures. People were getting really upset that Sangreen priests aren't able to go over every squad anymore. They're a HQ choice.
Yeah, rather than elite.
And that makes complete sense. In every book I've read, Sangarini Priests don't just tag along at the end or go in the middle of jump pack units to make sure everyone's okay. They're generally leading the charge or leading a squad or a strike force. So from a fluff perspective and from the reading your codex, it makes complete sense. Okay, there's been some cool bits like the Death Company dropping in price, but they've also moved over to the elite slot. Why is that an issue? Cool, I can't take, 30, yeah. 60, 90, 100, 180 Death Company anymore. Yeah.
I think this was, I don't think it's ever been an official pain, but the problem is the internet is always controlled by the haters. It's controlled by individuals who like the game a certain way, probably want the game to be a different way, don't appreciate the fluff potentially as much as other people.
Right.
Because, take the Sangarini Priests idea. They don't care whether that's more fluffy. They just want to take a load of them and abuse their rules.
Yeah.
Because they're either a tournament player, and that's not all tournament players at all. Don't want to paint them with that brush.
Well, you don't paint anything at the moment, so you can't.
Yeah, can't really do that at all. I'm not motivated enough to do that. But, tournament players or people who, for some reason, love crushing small children in stores or, in gaming.
Ooh, we here at the Adeptus Terra podcast don't condole crushing children in stores.
No, do it in the street.
In the street.
Where they can wash away the blood. but the kind of individuals who want to make the nastiest of nasties lists and want to abuse that unbound rule, that everyone kicked up a fuss about when 7th came out.
Yeah.
Because they're not understanding the full breadth of this hobby and how, personally, I think it's made to be played. It's made to be played with the background in mind, not just reenacting the stories, although you can do that, and that's a really cool thing. But use that fluff and background to help base your army, how to build your list, how to do all this stuff.
And hear about this more in the last segment ruining for everyone.
No, I'm sorry. Keep doing this in this episode.
So basically, in a summary, my pain is that how can you complain about a codex that you've not properly seen, read, or have in your hands and not sound like an idiot?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? And the problem is we both try and stay away from rumours because it's so easy to get sucked in. But when it's the week before your codex, I was the same with the Space Wolves. I hadn't seen any. I'd stayed off Facebook because I knew people would be posting it. And I was like, I need to stay away from this. And then the week before, all of a sudden, my self-control dropped and it was like, oh, I can take this. Oh, that's really sucky. Oh, look at that new unit, and you get sucked in because you care so much about your army.
Yeah.
But having a flick through, and I've only talked to you over the phone the last couple of days about it, and having a flick through this evening, it looks really good. It looks strong. I'm liking it.
The haters are going to hate, and players are going to play.
I don't want to get sued by Taylor Swift.
I don't know. If she came down and served the
if she
leader,
listened, I'd be... I'd fall stoked. Over. I'd fall over in shock.
Yeah. Cool. Well, before we start talking about the Blood Angel Codex too much, let's move on to our joy. The combined joy is the Overlords.
We do probably need to come back and talk about the Blood Angel Codex.
We'll do it next episode. Let me digest and play.
Yeah, okay.
And then we'll do a segment on it next
episode.
Well,
tell you what, 40K Spotlight.
40K Spotlight, the Blood Angels.
The Blood Angels and their new codex.
So that means I'm going to have to read it now.
The codex. And I'm going to have to read it, so you're going to have to lend it to me.
No, you have to buy your own.
Oh, damn it. Anyway.
Start another army.
Overlords. Right.
So,
hey.
Oi.
I host this show.
I'm talking.
No.
Go on then.
Sorry, that sounded really power hungry. I don't really mind. But
so, the Overlords pot. No, I'm joking. Go on.
Table flip.
Everybody, please don't. There's too much stuff on
there's too here. Much expensive things on here.
Check out the Facebook page for a photo.
Yeah.
Shameless plug.
Oh, wow. But, yeah, we want to talk about the Overlords Doubles Day that we attended. Doubles Day sounds better.
It's not a doubles tournament.
It wasn't a tournament, really. There was two sides, and there was a winner and a loser in some ways.
But it's not a tournament.
But it wasn't a tournament, and it didn't have the feel of a tournament. No one was there to win. Everyone was there to have fun and get together and enjoy the idea of Christmas, really. The premise of it was Overlords host, member, whatever you want to say, Johnny kind of organized it all, and it was a doubles day where you played with three random partners.
Three random pairings versus three random
other opponents. Yeah.
Yeah.
And doubles, and we'll split naughty or nice to go with the Christmas theme.
So Imperium were nice, other than Imperium Knights, which are naughty, and Xenos was naughty as well.
Yeah,
and
Xenos, Chaos, yeah.
Yeah, the normal. Huh. The normal, if you
Imperium versus everyone.
Where did Elder fit in?
I don't know. They were probably... I don't know. Dark Elder. I didn't actually see much Elder. There was a few.
There was one. I never played any. We had some really cool flyers.
Yeah, I never played any. But yeah, so that was kind of the premise of the day. We each played three games. We're going to share a little bit about that. We actually saw each other across the table in our third game.
And it was really good that I won.
You didn't win.
I did win,
Don't lie to the people.
I'm not lying to the people. Yeah. I won.
There were witnesses.
I won the moral victory.
There were witnesses.
The moral victory was mine.
Well, fine, you can have the moral victory. I kicked your ass.
But you don't get the hoodie.
No. Oh, should have claimed that on the day.
You didn't get it. Oh. I actually haven't got it from Simon. Simon, if you're listening, give me the hoodie.
All right. But yeah, so we had our three games and we went at about 9 o'clock to register.
Yeah. We got the cards.
And we got the awesome tactical objectives.
Have you got them?
No, I haven't got them here. But they are really good and well made as well. And I'm really glad we got them because some people got there too late and didn't get them.
I think I would have nerd raged out if I didn't get them. And would have bitten the ear off the nearest nerd and took his.
Luckily that didn't happen.
No, I got my cards this time.
Yeah. But yeah, so we both got the tactical objective cards, which are really cool and want to use them at the club. We also got a pack for the three missions we were playing.
They were stapled in a really weird way.
Yeah, it was a bit odd.
Johnny, sort it out.
But it's probably a professional way, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we probably did it right. And
it's the London way. It's the Chiswick way.
It's the Chiswick way.
But yeah, and we had three kind of specific missions. It was all based around the Haven situation and the Pekeshi sector, which if you guys don't know about that, go check out the Overlords and all that stuff.
The YouTube channel,
you'll find out the background and stuff. But basically there was a giant squig that had tons of resources on it in space and everyone was fighting over it to get it. And if the naughty side got it, then that could cause a lot of problems for the Imperium later on in the big arc of the story. And if the nice side got it, then they could get rid of the squig as easily as possible and also use the resources to maybe bolster their defenses and push the naughties out of the area. So that was kind of the premise. And our first mission was called Squigfall.
Yes.
What were we doing in Squigfall?
So that was tactical objectives.
Yeah, the whole day was Maelstrom, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was using
really cool.
The Overlord's cards.
Yep. So the first one was pretty much just six objectives in the middle of the board, normally
Dawn of War style.
Dawn of War style.
Long table edges, for those that don't know.
It was pretty much just charge the enemy and kill them and probably stand on an objective or two.
Yeah, you could steal some from your opponents, like capture and controls, I think. And something else you could steal from your opponents.
Okay.
Not all of them, but some of the objectives you could capture them. If they'd drawn it and you got there first, you would get it. So that was quite a cool mechanic. But yeah, do you want to go into your first game quickly?
Yeah, so my first game I was paired with a guy called Tom. Tom was running counts as Iron Hands, Space Wolf Force. All of his... What were you looking at that for?
Nothing.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Carry on.
So it was a counts as Iron Hands, Space Wolf Force, and he was using the Iron Hands rules, and they're all on bikes, which is really cool to see.
It was a fully bike list, wasn't it?
Yeah, the bikes were all converted, so a lot of the models were the old orc bikes, so the single tracks in the back to sort of kind of make a skidoo type type vehicle for the Space Wolf, which is what you'd see a Space Wolf riding.
I guess a giant kind of what they called snowmobile.
Skidoo's the right word.
All right, I don't know.
So that was also really cool.
Sorry,
to see.
We didn't say we were asked to bring 500 points, and it had to be one HQ, one troop.
Which is really difficult for Blood Angels.
Which, yeah, can be quite difficult. But I just thought I'd put that in there.
Cool. So we did that, and I was playing against two Imperial Guard players. One was using the Imperial Armour 14?
13.
13 book?
Yeah, Legion of the Lost and the Damned, I think it's called.
Something like that.
Imperial Armour Forge World book. Awesome for Chaos. If you're a Chaos player, get it.
And he was playing the Guard side of it, so they're all Chaos cultists and whatnot. And that was pretty cool to see. Really nice, really well painted. The guy had been to like Nova a few times. And
yeah, they were really cool. Well. Really cool.
And the other Guard player was running primarily like troop based units.
Yeah, yeah, had lots of chimeras.
Few tanks, few chimeras. A pretty standard 500 point guard force, to be honest.
Okay.
We ended up, me and Tom won.
That's great.
We won through the objectives. It was really easy grabbing objectives, both being on bikes. It meant that we could sort of get the...
Yeah, what was your list?
My list was a captain on a bike with five other bikers and an attack bike and scouts to make up the troop choices.
Yeah.
The scouts basically did nothing all day, missed every shot and didn't kill a single thing. The bikes were pretty good. Nice charging into stuff. The attack bike shot some tanks. So that was quite cool. Primarily, though, I was using them to zoom around and grab objectives, which I think they're probably best suited for.
Yeah.
But it was good. The game was good. It was quite a nice, easy start. I always worry when I go to these type of things that you're going to play that, you know, that player across the table.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty chilled day. And even though this guy turned up with an Imperial Armor book, it was like, well, he explained everything he was doing. And
yeah, he was a really nice guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get a chance to play him, but we chatted to him at the lunch break, didn't we?
Yeah, the cafe. The models he were using were, where were they? They were
Necromunda models.
So they're really cool.
Such a good idea for like Chaos Guard. They just look more like cultists.
Yeah.
But they branch the gap and you can get them quite cheap.
Yeah.
It was such a good idea that it made me want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But every time you see something else doing someone else,
yeah, I
want to
do it.
You want to do it. So it was a good game, good models, good painted, nice playing, fully painted army, fully painted scenery.
Yeah, that was really good. Everyone was painted pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. So what about your first game?
My first game was, again, against two guard players, actually. Mm. But I was on the naughty side because I took orcs, as I've shared already. And I took 20 orc boys with a knob, power claw, boss pole in a death roller built up battle wagon. So I gave it the death roller. I had four rockets on it. I just poured points into the battle wagon just because I thought, why not?
So what, that battle wagon was probably the equation of one biker.
No, orcs, they're not that cheap in their vehicles, actually.
You still got two vehicles in.
Yeah, I did. I took a truck and they're like 30 points. But yeah, I had 20 orc boy squad, power claw knob with, boss pole. And all the boys were slugger choppers, so extra attack and close combat. Took a charge forward, punch stuff kind of list, as orcs do. And then I took 10 orc boys with a power claw knob again, a boss pole in a truck, and my weird boy was a level 2, a warp head psyker, because I thought a level 2 psyker at 500 points is pretty good. And it was a blast, and my orcs did really well all day. I was playing with Kieran from the Overlords, that sometimes is on the Overlords podcast, plays Dark Elder quite a lot, and he brought his Dark Elder force. He had some Hellions, Reaver jet bikes, and a squad of witches with a succubus, who's the witch character leader. And she had a warp portal, so they could deep strike and not scatter. It's one of the new rules from the newest codex that came out fairly recently. So that was really cool. The guard players we were playing had kind of standard guard, like blob squads, quite a few infantry squads. There was one squad of vets in a chimera. There was a squad of three sentinels with las cannons, which I thought was a really good idea because of the small points. And there was a Lehman Russ, which scared the hell out of me. And the thing was, is the Imperial Guard players hadn't played that much.
Yeah.
They were kind of new into the hobby. They were getting back into it. Like most people, they have their kind of time as a kid, drop out of it because it's not cool, and then get to adulthood and go, actually, I don't really care what people think, and get back into it. That was definitely my experience of this hobby. And they were kind of learning the rules, and it was a really fun game. They were nicest guys. Like, you know, I nearly forgot the psychic phase after shooting one thing, and they said, yeah, no, sure, go for it. And when they forgot orders, we said, oh, yeah, no, roll it. It was really friendly. But they moved towards us, which meant that I could move my battle wagon 6, get out 6, and then charge him with about an 8-inch charge with one reroll.
Yeah.
So my big orc boy squad just punched through unit after unit pretty much all game. And we ended up winning that like 7-2. It was a bit of a massacre. I think they had maybe like 5 guardsmen left and 1 sentinel. And I didn't lose a unit, and I'm orcs. So that's quite scary, really. But that was my first game, and it was a really good start to the day. You know, meeting Kieran was really cool. Heard him on the podcast. for the Overlords, and it was cool playing him. He's quite chilled out, just kind of let me get on with it, really. And the two guys couldn't have been the nicest guys to start off the day, so I was really chuffed after game one.
Cool, awesome. So game two, I was playing Kieran, actually. I was playing against
You played against him, yeah.
Yeah, I was playing against Kieran with his Dark Elder, and I was playing against Chaos. It was Chaos with the Pink Marines.
Yeah, he was playing Chaos. It's Steve, the guy that we went out with, wasn't it, in the evening?
Yeah, so he was playing Chaos, but they were Pink. That was always fun. He was really, really cool. Really, very jokey. So,
Salt of the Earth kind of character, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can have a bit of banter, a bit of fun with you, but then if he can tell that's getting to you, he might, you know, probably stop or something.
Or make it worse. But it was cool. And I was told when we were talking about our podcast that he was like, you must mention the Pink Marines. So the Pink Marines were good. They were a librarian.
Yeah, if you're listening, Steve, you're a cool dude.
Terminator librarians and I assume a attack squad.
Chaos Marines.
I was playing it with, I think he was French. Was he French?
Don't know. He had a dog. That was cool.
He brought his dog along. Yeah. But he didn't give up, though. He might not have been French.
Yeah, he would have just not played. He would have been on strike, by game two.
I'm pretty sure he was French. He was using the Sentinels of Terror, so that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
I think it was a new codex for him. He didn't really know all the rules for them, which was difficult at times. However, if it's a new start. I'd rather he came along and started playing them and learnt more than didn't come along and never learned.
Yeah.
So especially playing against Kieran and with me and maybe Steve wasn't the best person to play against. But Kieran was explaining what he was doing and what he needed to do. I was trying to help him out with his powers and his psychic stuff. So it was a good game. We ended up losing. I ended up getting tabled. No, I didn't get tabled. I had one scout alive.
Yeah.
I nearly got tabled. I had one objective to hold, which meant we would have won. We would have got 3 points for it. And I was sat on. All I had to do was hold this objective for 2 rounds to get 3 points.
Yeah.
And what happened was I got charged by the Terminators and the Librarian.
Yeah.
The Librarian challenged, and then I got charged by the guys on bikes on the hoverboards.
Hellions.
I got charged by Hellions as well. And that was with a captain, two bikers, and an attack bike. So I pretty much died.
Yeah.
For the first charge on that one. The highlight of the game, I think, was probably trying to shoot at Steve, and Steve being like, "You can't shoot me. Why not? I'm within 24 inches. I've got a special melter gun, force field." I don't think that exists, Steve. No, it definitely exists. Read your codex. It was stuff
Joker.
Like that. It was very jokey cool. around. So it was cool.
Again, a really good vibe. There was a good vibe all day, wasn't there, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, my second game was teamed up with Commissar Random himself.
Legend that is.
Yeah, Mr. John Young from the Overlords again. He's kind of the head honcho. He hosts all their shows and really funny guy, really quick-witted. He was kind of preoccupied. He was buying lots of stuff at the Bits store. I hear the Overlords joke about him buying stuff all the time and doing all these crazy conversions.
Where does the money come from?
And, well, he works in London, I guess. I don't know. We didn't chat about that. only just meeting him for the first time.
Talking about your finances.
Yeah. So he was kind of doing that on setup. The scenario for this game was the naughty side had to set up in the middle of the board in a circle. And everyone had to deploy the nice teams got to deploy around them, all sides, with, I think, 24-inch deployment, something like that. So they were kind of in the four corners of the board. And it was pretty much get out or you're going to die. You know, in the middle, it was Maelstrom again, so six objectives spread out across the board. We were thinking, we've got no hope here. We played one of the Imperial Guard players I played in the first game, a guy called Ed. I didn't mention his name, so sorry, Ed, if you're listening. But he played again, and that was really cool. He had a large blob squad, company command squad, the three Sentinels again, and just more Guardsmen.
So always more Guardsmen.
Always more. That's why they're fine with dying and killing them. So he was one half the side, and the other one was a guy called Lewis, I'm pretty sure. And he brought counts as Iron Hands, I think. He brought Marines. And he brought squad of Sniper Scouts, Terminator Librarian level 1 with telepathy powers, a Vindicator, and a Carreras pattern, Contemptor Dreadnought. So it was a really hard hitting list, you know, that Marines with a lot of Guardsmen.
I think it was a little bit much for under 500 points. Four or 500 points.
It felt that way. It felt like I'm going to take the nastiest things I can think of. That's what it felt like.
That's the kind of list that I'd be like, can I just look at your list?
Make sure it actually matches.
Just because a Vindicator, what, 125?
Yeah, no, it's easily within 500 points.
Contempt,
yeah, they're not that much. They're not like 200 points.
It just sounds like a massive list for what it was.
Well, it wasn't massive. It had 6 infantry and 2 vehicles, but it was just hard hitting. So we were like, blimey, we need to deal with this.
Call blimey, Governor. Where we're in London.
Commissar Random is a really good tactician from what I picked up from playing with him. And we kind of worked out, right, if I sent a large squad of orcs towards the large squad of guard and they'll fight it out and we'll see what happens there. And the other one was my orcs were the own and the power claw in that unit, and the weird boy with his strength 6 staff could wreck the Vindicator quite well.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't that many high units. Commissar Random brought traitor guard, just playing out the Astra Militarum codex. So you had some missiles and a blob squad with a commissar, of course. And a platoon command squad with a couple of melters, but obviously everything had to get close before they could really do much. So I just drove my truck 12 inches and then went flat out. This is the highlight of the game for me, really. So I went 24 inches and then pivoted. I did it in such a way that I completely blocked his Vindicator off from shooting at anything else. Like, the only thing it could shoot at was a 1-inch away truck. And then turn 2, like, he couldn't move because he was literally in the corner of the board, so he couldn't even pivot and drive around my truck.
Oh, you snookered him.
Yeah.
Good.
So he decided not to shoot it and just kind of gave it up.
I would have shot it and just...
Yeah, I would have done the same, but he didn't. And I got out and punched it to death without it ever shooting. His Dreadnought was causing us a major amount of problems, but... again, like I said, Commissar Random was a really good tactician, and he kind of hid his guard round a building, so the Contemptor couldn't really shoot much. Like, he was killing like 1 or 2 a turn because he couldn't see anymore. And although it's got great firepower, it only moves 6 inches, and it started right in the corner of the board again. So that really helped us. And there was lots going on the other side of the board, but we've got other games to get through. But we ended up winning that game. Barely. So it was like 12-8 because of all the objectives and things. But yeah, my highlight was my truck. It just did that 24 inches, completely snookered the Vindicator. They killed that. Then those boys stayed on the objective because that was pulled up.
Yeah.
And then my truck, empty, drove another 24 inches and ended up on another objective, which gave us another point. Mm. And it was my couple of points at the end of the game doing that that meant that we won the game. That said, I didn't get past turn 3 in any of my games.
See, that's weird. I did. I got to turn 5 every
but
turn.
But I guess when you're playing Horde, you've got that many models to move.
Yeah.
And my whole army was based in Assault.
Yeah.
So we had, like, pretty much every game first turn, or if not straight away second turn, Assaults.
Yeah.
So which Assaults slow down the game. And there's obviously a time limit because we had 3 games to get through in a day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a really fun game. It was good playing with Commissar Random. The guys we played against were nice enough and really, really good game. Yeah, and then we on to the third one.
So I played this really, really annoying orc list. And I think that they cheated and didn't actually have that many models. And they just basically cheated and took more models than they should have.
Yeah, not true.
Not true. No, so I played Matt.
It was really cool, actually.
I played with Tom second again. And that was really cool. Inevitable, and I don't want to put it and blame other things, but when you have 2 orc players together, very troop heavy orc players against 12?
I think it was, probably 15? Between 12 and 15 bikes.
Okay, say 15. Against 15 bikes, you're not really going to win.
Yeah, I mean...
The only thing we could do is he had some heavy hitting unit. He had some heavy hitting guy in his squad. So he went and held up a blob.
He didn't just hold up a blob.
He annihilated a blob. And then I jumped around to get objectives, but then got charged.
Yeah, because you got a warlord trait that meant that you got two for every numbered objective.
Yeah, so that was really cool.
Before we move into how the game went,
we were
playing on a 4x4 board.
Yeah.
And it was really dense terrain. It was kind of like a city fight kind of game.
Yeah.
Which meant my vehicles were really kind of stuck, so I had to get out of them fairly quick.
Yeah. The mission was.
Again, six objectives.
Objectives, yeah. You had to draw the amount of objectives that you had.
You were sitting on, yeah.
So that was really cool, a nice little twist. And we were deploying in table quarters, which must have been really difficult for you.
Yeah, there wasn't that much space. Well, I wasn't too bad because I had two vehicles and everything was in them.
Yeah.
But the other guy, I played a guy who didn't speak very much English.
He was Spanish, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Spanish, a guy called Miguel. And he was really nice and he was really humble, actually, because naturally, I kind of took lead because he didn't quite know the rule set very well and his English was difficult. So, I mean, I made sure I was explaining things to him, but I definitely took the lead in that game and he stayed with us all game. It was brilliant. He could have, in some ways, walked off and I could have just played you two, but he didn't, and that was really cool of him.
Yeah.
And our tactics kind of worked. I just sent all my guys forward, got into assaults, killed what I could and died.
Yeah.
I had hardly anything left at the end of the game, but then his guys came back and as a mopping action.
Mm. So it was a good game. I think if I was taking a 1,000-point list, it would have been much different and wouldn't have been 15 bikes. I obviously would have taken some troops and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But as a game, it was good.
It was fun. It was nice. It was nicely tempered.
And technically, I won the moral victory, so that was fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You had like one scout left or two or something.
Two.
Yeah.
And I'm the good side, therefore I always win.
Okay, fine.
I did want to
table you, but again, we didn't get past turn three.
No.
It was just turn one assaults and then turn two assaults, and when you're rolling that many dice and this many saves.
If it went on, I would have probably run away.
You were retreeting anyway, weren't
Tom,
you?
Tom got his half tabled.
Yeah, he was tabled already.
All my bikes died, it's just my scouts, and they were running off being followed by orcs, so I would have been tabled. But it was an interesting scenario. I probably would like to play it again.
Definitely. I'd like to play it as 1,000-point, like one player versus one player,
because
it was a really cool scenario.
Yeah.
I was really happy that I got away with three wins all day. I won three games with orcs. Other than the game I played against you, I didn't lose a unit, not even my truck.
Mm.
That's unheard of. I must have had such good luck. It's only now that I'm kind of realizing that.
So I won two. And Morrill won the last one. So technically, I won three games. Well done. We both won three games.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
So what was your highlight of the games? So one scenario that one of your characters did that was really cool, one of your guys did that was really cool.
I had, in the second game, I lost my battle wagon quite early to the Las Cannon Sentinels.
Yeah.
And in the explosion, lost like 15 of the 20 boys.
Yeah.
And then in Overwatch, charging a 30-man blob squad,
yeah,
I lost the other three boys, unsurprisingly. So I had a knob with a power claw. So going last against 30 guardsmen.
Yeah.
Yeah, killed them all, sweep and advance them.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Then next turn, charged the sentinels, blew up one sentinel, and then the next turn, blew up the other two sentinels to give us a kill point. Because the second game had kill points involved as well.
So MVP was the orc knob.
That orc knob in that game technically killed two units on his own in two turns.
Mm.
So, flipping amazing. He's a hero.
Cool, awesome. I think mine would have probably been my first game where my captain charged up behind Lehman Russ and threw a crack bomb on the back of it as he went past and exploded and then got
drive-by grenade
basically and then got a wreck result and
that's
then
amazing
and then just carried on going, took the objective and won the game.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So I see it as if it was cinematic, I think the captain would be played by myself and then it would be sort of like a Hail Mary style
epic music in the background,
kind of like Mozart sort of big music, and then sort of me just sort of throw in slow motion as you see the grenade slowly tick, the pin fly
and that
out.
That sound of ding, ding, ding,
yeah,
ding.
Yeah, yeah. and it, hits, it goes underneath, recoils off the tracks a little bit, and then just
and then
I go off into the sunset with a girl on the back of my bike. That's how I see it happening.
Blood Angels, aka Pretty Marines.
Yeah, Pretty Marines. Pretty Marines that throw bombs
with nipples.
Tanks. Don't hate, because your guys are the other side of Twilight.
All right.
So
that was the first kind of, and that the main section of the day, I guess.
Yeah.
Afterwards, we got the privilege of being part of the, in the crowd for their special segment they do on their Christmas show. Or the Overlords, they did Have I Got the 41st Millennium News For You?
Yeah.
Based off Have I Got News For You, that's on BBC. I think it's BBC.
I don't
know. Anyway. And Johnny run that. It was really funny. And those guys are very experienced and know what they're doing. And it was really cool to watch. I think just before that, we got a good chance to chat to a couple of them about this podcast, and they gave us some really good advice on apps we can use,
compression in,
and talked a bit about who we use as our service provider and this and that, and we got some really good tips along with the tips that we got from our friends and people over Facebook, and we're looking to really push this podcast and get better and better. That was really cool. Once we did that, we kind of tied it up, and we went to the pub
and then Nando's.
And then back to the pub.
And then back to the pub.
For me, this was the best part of the day.
Yeah.
I loved hanging out with the guys, hanging out with... What?
Nothing. It's fine.
Why is that funny?
No, it's all right. Don't worry. All right. Everyone else understands.
Okay. But yeah, it was really good just hanging out with Jason and Johnny from the Overlords. Again, just talking about our podcast, hearing them talk about theirs. And just getting to know them personally as well. Like, they're really nice guys, really friendly, really supportive. I messaged them both just saying how cool it was and it'd be awesome to meet up in the new year and stuff.
Do you see any light from where you are right now? Or is it just purely in their colon?
No, they're just cool guys. Like, I'd say that I'd hope they'd say the same thing about us. It was really cool being with them and some of the guys who hung around. We went and had Nando's and we were talking about Doctor Who for like half an hour. That was really cool. And then just being in the pub and chatting about all sorts of nonsense.
Yeah. Stuff we can't actually tell you because it's podcast stuff.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was a good day. I enjoyed the gaming, but like you said, the hanging out at the end. It would have been cooler if we got the train rather than me driving so I could have a drink. But, I took that bullet. For the podcast.
Yeah,
the team.
It was awesome.
It's fine. Matt's going to drive next time. I'm going to get wrecked.
Oh, dear. But those guys can drink.
They do. They do drink indeed.
But yeah, I mean, we came back and it was an awesome day and we're really glad we went and thanks for putting it on. Like we said, go check out the Overlords. They're awesome. It was truly our joy of the month to just go and have three games. Last month I had no games and this month I had four. And they were all with different people, and they were all really good fun. So thank all the people I played all month. That was really cool.
Cool,
right. We need to move this on. So we're going to have another quick break and come back with our third segment, 40K Spotlight.
Merry Christmas. As you may have heard on the Adeptus Terra podcast, we have lots of breaks. If you wish to advertise within these breaks, just drop us an email on theadeptusterrapodcast@gmail.com. We'll happily advertise any gaming groups, shops, or any other podcasts. Just drop us an email.
And welcome back to our third segment, the 40K Spotlight. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the Militarum Tempestus Scions.
Otherwise known as the Scions, the thingies, the guys in the black armour.
The Stormtroopers.
The Stormtroopers. How was it described at the Overlords?
That they're Militarum, Military Wing, and Tempestus Storm. Like, they are the Stormtroopers. That's generally what they've done.
Cool.
Anyway.
Nice.
we're going to talk about the Militarum Tempestus, where they come from, who they're made up of, what war gear they have, the kind of way they choose to fight in the 41st millennium. Then we're even going to go into our at least planned collection of the Scions that we're both going to be doing.
Yes.
And into what they provide in the game itself.
Cool.
Let's get started. there's no other place to start other than the Skola Progenium. The Skola Progenium is basically where they go to train. I won't tell you who yet. That's coming soon. but yeah, it's basically the institute that's they're run by the Adeptus Ministerium, and the ecclesiarchy kind of oversee it. They have abbots that kind of like warrior monks, I guess, that train up the what are known as progena or progena from the Skola Progenium, and train them up to be ready for different types of fighting. So we have the Militarum Tempestus themselves, who we're focusing on for today, but they also train the Officio Prefectus, which are the commissars of the Imperial Guard. And some of the women will get chosen to serve the Adepta Sororitas, the Battle Sisters.
The best sorority house in the world.
Yeah. You know, some will go off and work for the Adeptus Ministerium, the ones with, you know, such faith. And a very few, select few, will join the Officio Assassinorum and become our badass assassins. So that's really cool. Sam, why don't you tell us about who actually goes to the Skola Progenium?
So much like Harry Potter, many young kids wanted to go to Hogwarts when they were reading the books. That's not really how this works.
Yeah.
But as a nice little segue in, I thought I'd talk about Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, this is the grim dark of Hogwarts.
So kind of like Hogwarts. These are the children who go to them. So they start from 6 years old, as young as 6 years old,
yeah,
up to 12 years old. And basically, they are the offspring of many high officials, planetary governors, parliamentary bodies, important people within the Imperium,
yeah,
but when their planets have been completely wiped out, when there is no one left,
other than the children somehow,
it's ascribed in the Codex as officers from Imperial fleets can go to planets and recce after there's been a big attack and find a random small child in the palace,
you know, hiding in a cupboard
corner
or something, yeah,
and not be spotted by the gene stealers, but they are then basically donated to, yeah, to the orphanage of the future.
They don't really have a choice in the matter, do they?
Rather than becoming a burden on the Imperium any further, they are set to serve. They are given the job to go and live at this orphanage and be trained. Also, if your grandfather, your father, your brother, your uncle did something really good for the Imperium, you can also be selected and taken to the...
Yeah, it's the greater good who have got genes where they are probably going to do something good in the future because their parents or family members did.
So Junior Yarrick, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
To be fair, Yarrick's got to die first.
Probably
he just
up.
Keeps getting back up, yeah.
But the way you get in is basically be a child in the Imperium and have a rich family.
Yeah, there was a really cool story. Well, it's kind of a rumor, like in the Codex that I was reading it this week, of a commissar noticing a really talented child, but his mum and dad were still alive, and they were the planetary like governor and governoress, I guess. So the commissar had him killed so he could take the kid.
So basically, he went all bolt pistol to the head on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop running away. We're not running away.
Yeah. So yeah, these guys are exactly that. They are the orphans of the great and the good who are killed off in assassinations or planetary invasions.
I thought the young as a six was pretty good. 6 to 12.
Yeah, 6 to 12 is kind of like the starting ages of most of these guys who are training to become killers.
So they get put on like big ships and transported back to their local orphanage, really. It's
yeah,
quite a nice thing the Imperium do for their...
Yeah, so I thought the Skola Progenium was like one place. Like it was like there's one Skola Progenium, like on Terra or something.
Mm.
But apparently there's a few. There's not that many, but they're kind of scattered throughout the universe, and that kind of makes sense, I guess. And you're not going to transport an orphan for 3 months to get them back to Terra when there's one just down the road kind of idea, at least in the bigger picture of the universe. But yeah, these large groups of orphans that kind of tend to come about at the same time if there's been a plague or something can start huge. You know, sometimes 200 of them will get shipped off to the closest Skola Progenium. And what we'll see is them quickly weeded out. either by the abbots who are taking charge because they see some form of heresy or doubt in their mind, or even their classmates through drills and just bullying, I guess.
Accidental shootings.
Kids will be kids. But the Scola Progenium is designed to literally break and then rebuild these orphans, these sons and daughters of the Imperial elite, to literally break them down and turn them into the most loyal warriors that humanity can build. They're literally broken down till there's nothing left, and then built up through psycho conditioning, through physical exercise, through having hymns and war chants spoken over them day and night. Just constant training. You know, they're interrogated by clerics of the ecclesiarchy, and if they see a bit of corruption or spiritual weakness, they'll kill them off because they're too dangerous for the batch.
And it's all right, there's 199 more where they came from, so it's all right.
Yeah. I mean, here it says that the Servo Skulls even monitor their eye twitches while they're sleeping to see if they're having seditious dreams. Don't know how that they can tell, but that's one of the things they're looking out for. They'll, you know, be on punishment vigils if they're not killed, if they've only done a slight thing of doubt and maybe questioned one thing and they've only just got there. They might go, well, we won't kill you today, but here's 100 lashes or something. You know, it's not a nice place. It's the grim, dark Hogwarts.
So much like the brainwashed people, they are taught to forget anything that happened prior to their arrival at the orphanage. They are mind wiped and scrubbed clean.
They talk about that in some detail, don't they? It's quite nasty.
Yeah, so it's like when the Grey Knights go to a planet and they decide not to kill it, they decide to scrub it. And basically mind wipe everyone there. It does say that every cadet will be strapped down to an iron chair known as a correction throne. Needles are then inserted through the rear of the cadet's skull, and the heads are flooded with Dreus, a neurochemical fluid that cleanses their synapses, wiping away old memories and paving the way for the new information of the Imperium.
Mm.
We should do that to everyone.
Scary, man. Like, I read this and I go, maybe Chaos have got it right.
Yeah, no. You've read the Night Lord books. They haven't got it right.
Yeah, they're pretty messed up too. But, you know, it tells us that some of these cadets will have dreams and visions of their parents and even maybe the deaths of their parents, that they can never really get rid of these nightmarish visions. They find it really hard to sleep.
But don't tell anyone just in case they get, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, anyone that disobey orders tends to see the
lash.
The lash or even the hammer from an ecclesiarchy abbot. You know, a big thunder hammer to the face will probably stop you disobeying orders.
Which brings us back to our discussion over corporal punishment. We should definitely bring that back over to school kids. Some of them are just too lippy.
I'm not even going to comment on that. But, you know, they do some really nasty stuff. There's a story in the book that a whole kind of batch rose up against the ecclesiarchy of the of one of the Scola Progeniums.
Yeah.
And what they did is they basically trapped them in a steel cage while they were still alive, and then just poured cement on them. And now there's like jutting bits of hands and stuff out of the wall where they're trying to get out. And they literally just buried them alive, and they're there for an eternal example not to disobey.
Which is good. I think that's definitely a valid way of
and that's so dark.
Punishment and
that's so
order.
Dark. But yeah, eventually they get to the point of their trials of compliance, where they'll have to do a task. And the Commissar's one will be
my favourite one. That is definitely my favourite.
Yeah, it's pretty mad.
Where they're just told to, here's a bolt pistol, kill the person next to you.
Yeah, here's a name. Go find them and shoot them in the head.
And it teaches them to basically follow blind orders.
Yes.
Or do what we tell you, not what you think. And those who refuse. Are quite often the ones that are next being told to be killed.
Yeah, they're going to get taken out by someone who will.
So that's always pretty
I guess the thing about a Commissar is they're there to even shoot their best friend if they're disobeying the orders of the Imperium and the Emperor himself. So they need to be able to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just so dark. But yeah, they go through this the trials, and all those that succeed and survive will come to a day known as the Selection Day. And at this point, the abbot who's been in charge of that batch of kids and the ones that are left, I guess, will then give them their paths, and there'll be it'll be a big long out day with loads of ships coming and picking up people to take them off to Sassanorum temples or to the Ordo Prefectus to become commissars, or the Militarum Tempestus, or the Arbites, or the Sororitas. Some will even go and serve the Adeptus Terror.
Yeah.
Lackeys.
Woo. Yeah. Get me a drink.
And yeah, and they'll go off on their paths, and they'll leave their friends behind and become regiments of a certain branch of the Schola Progenium. And for this, we're talking about the Tempestus Science.
So the majority of all the cadets that go through, so you're talking 190 out of the 200,
yeah,
the ones that survived, will go and serve the Tempestus Science. The training that they will then receive because of the type of job that the Science will be doing, jumping out of ships.
Valkyries.
Jumping out of Valkyries. Not Vendettas. Towards the floor. Not Vendettas. Jumping out of the Valkyries, the discipline required is so high that the job can only be fulfilled by these quite Terminator-esque, emotionally blank people who would just blindly follow orders. I think it's quite fair to say that the death rate that happens when they're in the Militarum Tempestus is quite high anyway. Look at any guardsman.
Yeah.
So there's always, that's why they always take the 190.
Yeah, I mean, there's more training going on, isn't there? The Schola Progenium trains them in, you know,
murder,
in killing and you know, using guns and physical conditioning and all of this kind of stuff. And then they'll go to the Schola Tempestus and learn to become scions. They'll learn how to jump out of Valkyries. They'll learn all the specific tasks that they'll have, and they'll hone those skills they've already built up, and some will fail and some will die in that, and then eventually you end up with your full Militarum Tempestus Scions. You know, you end up with them fully qualified, they're ready to go out to battle, they're in their regiment, they're going to follow orders no matter what, and serve the Imperium until they die in combat. They're kind of just diehard servants. I mean, we read that they work alongside the manpower of the Imperial Guard, of the the Astra Militarum, as it is now.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a mass number of manpower, but what we will see is an elite force come alongside them and provide a simple task that the Guard cannot do just because they're not trained in that way, and they'll get behind enemy lines and take out a leader and then go away again. And that can just sway the battle. They're built to be that knife blow, the hidden knife, almost like assassins in that retrospect. They're there to take out a base, a gun emplacement, a leader, a squad. They're given a task and they will do it and die doing it. And the ones that are successful and survive will go back and join another regiment if all their other guys are dead.
Mm. I think it's the other jobs that they get asked to do are a lot of dignitary escortation work. So looking
yeah,
after
I thought that was really interesting.
Planets, kind of like really good guardsmen.
Do you think I'd be really annoyed if that was me?
Why?
Like, you go through all of that training and all of that punishment. Right. Yeah, if I was a scion, sorry. go through all that punishment, all that grueling training, and you've seen a lot of your friends die and all this stuff, and then they go and guard this dude on a backwater planet and you'll probably never see combat. And when you do, there won't be anyone to help you, so you'll probably die.
I don't think it's such a this is your life type thing. I think it's more of a, we've got someone going to be coming down to the planet. You need to look after them while they're here.
Oh, right, for a month or something.
I don't think they'd waste...
Like
a long term, go over here and
I guess they'd be too precious once you've invested that much time and effort.
Absolutely. And another job they'd be given is to work for the Inquisition. So look after them when they're on planets, for instance, or form maybe part of their retinue, which is very, very, very good segue onto my list. So
we'll move on to that in a second. Yeah, we've got a little bit more to talk about before we move on to that. But yeah, you know, the Scions are their elite soldiers. They're there to enact missions that the Imperial Guard can't. They're there to get behind enemy lines. They're there to do tasks that other people might question. You know, these guys have been conditioned mentally as well as physically to obey every single order. You know, that they've weeded out those that will doubt, those that will second guess. And these Scions are, you know, if they're told to shoot their best mate in the head, they will do it. And they'll go about their mission until they're either dead or it's completed. Often they'll come in and the mission will be done in a single day and then they'll get out. And that'll be it for the whole battle. You know, they kind of come in, do their thing like lightning, you know, come down from the skies, infiltrate in, however they're doing it, take out their target and leave. They're not in drawn-out battles. They're not there for that. They're there to be shock troopers. They're there to be stormtroopers, which was their old name. They're made to kick butt and leave. And like we said, sometimes they're honour guard and sometimes they look after people. But their main task and the task they're best at is killing stuff. Shall we move into how they kill stuff, the war gear they have?
Yeah.
So the first thing is their armor. Their armor is carapace armor. So in the game, it's a 4+, you know. but in the fluff, it's a much more intricate design. It's much more flowing for ease of move. Often really strong and tough material that will be thin. The metal plating will be quite thin, and they'll be wearing I guess like boiler suits or something underneath, you know, fatigues underneath the armor. So it's not rubbing and things like that. And it's really light and easy to move around. It's almost like a mini Space Marine armor in that sense. It's not as complete, but it has really ornate parts with their honor markings on it. But also it's there to protect them and does a good job doing so.
Right. So the normal gun that you'd see on a Tempest Assassin would be the Ryo's Pattern Hotshot Las Gun. Much like the Hotshot Las Guns you'd find in the Guard Codex, they are Strength 3 AP, AP 3.
Yeah.
Strength 3 AP 3. They are like any other Las Gun Las Gun or Flashlight, yeah, but just slightly lower AP. So you make Space Marines take, well, no save if they're dead.
If they're wounded, that's it. They're dead unless they're in cover, I guess.
Yep.
But, I mean, the thing that makes the gun different, and I guess the fluff behind, or the background behind, I should probably stop saying fluff, but the background behind the gun is that they use a hyper-yield backpack array, and they feed the energy beam rather than from, like, an ammo pack in normal las guns straight from their backpacks into the gun, and that gives them the searing hot beam that lowers that AP that will cut through that armor. And that's why it's so deadly, and that's why these guys use it. You know, it's a special pattern for them to get in and damage that armor and kill people who, you know, guard las guns just bounce off of. It's that whole, what is it, flashlight joke that everyone says, you know, Imperial Guard have just got flashlights, you know, but if you put a billion of them together, it's quite bright and could damage your eyes. But these guys have got a single weapon that will just shoot straight through your chest plate and straight through your heart and kill you. One of the things I found really interesting about the Adeptus Scions is that they have this slate monitron on their wrists, and they all have it. And it's basically a way of them keeping up with the orders and the commands coming through, because they might be separate to their commander at the time, whether that's a Commissar or a Tempesta Prime, who's like a company command squad commander for the Astra Militarum. They'll see the latest updates, and it will just keep updating their what are they called, orders. but the other thing they do is they show off all the health and like the pulse rate of their heart and the stims that are going around their body and their nervous system and all of this stuff. And the sergeants, the Tempestas, and the Tempesta Prime themselves can access that at any point and see the health status of all of their squad. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. It would mean that the squad know exactly what's going on with each other as well as themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought that was a really cool bit of equipment.
The helmet that they wear, well, that some of them wear.
Yeah.
A lot of the majority of them were berets, much like the Green Beret of the SAS.
Royal Marines?
The Royal Marines, much like the Green Beret. It's a mark of respect and position within the Scions. So a lot of them you will see with berets, but when they go into inhospitable planets, they have what's called an Omnishield helmet. The Omnishield helmet allows them to have nutritional gruel and oxygen pumped straight into them, effectively. I'm assuming there must be a tube, otherwise it would get really messy.
I have no idea.
But the helmet also allows them
to... fills up like a bowl.
Yeah, and you sort of eat your way out. The helmet also allows them to not need to go to sleep. They wear it for the duration of battle and or duration of time on the planet, and they will pretty much stay awake and alert.
Almost like hibernate at times of non-fighting, you know, if it's in between a wave of an attack or something.
It talks about them going, they simply stand side by side in their transport between missions in a sort of trance, dormant yet ever alert, although the superiors do not encourage reliance upon these techniques for too long. It sounds very much like you don't need sleep. Like Space Marines, Space Marines don't technically need sleep.
Space Marine light.
Yeah. It's like being like Space Marines, but it's not really encouraged because it'll probably drive you mental after a while.
Yeah, and they'll probably turn and kill all their mates.
And
you know, you're just giving these guys this awesome las gun and all this equipment, and then they're going to turn it against you because they're not sleeping, and they start, I don't know, maybe having some of those nightmarish visions from their past.
Yeah.
Like it says that they never get over. So you wouldn't want that to happen. What else do they have? I mean, they have medikits, which are the same as usual, as normal kind of medikits, really. Nothing special there. The monoscope's quite cool. It's basically CCTV for the 41st millennium.
Is that the one that's on the backpack?
Yes, it's on the backpack, and it basically screens around where the Tempestus Scion is looking.
Yeah.
And basically records their every move. It's like a helmet cam on a army soldier today, I guess. And again, the Prime... using the slate monotron, can access what's on that screen. So they can not only see what's around that corner before they go through their own men, but also they can assess their actions, their choices. They can see if they falter on an order. You know, if the order is kill that child because they can't be trusted and they think, oh no, should I do this? Then they could get punished for it or even killed. It says in the Scion Codex that actually covering up the monoscope is punishable by death.
Cool, good.
So that was really interesting.
Punishable by deaths.
Yeah, it was really interesting kind of bit of kit that they must have and they must take care of.
So the Tempestus Primes, who are like squad sergeants.
They're like the company commander.
So yeah, the company commander. They can be rewarded what's called a regimental greatcoat. It's normally associated with commissars, and basically it's an indication of their rank and their experience within the Scions.
Yeah.
It remarks their shared heritage
with the commissars
and basically ranks them in their position. In addition, they carry a skull-crested staff known as a canna militarum. That's in honor of the Scola Pagenium, and only issued to warriors of true greatness, of distinction.
Yeah, so not all primes will have that. No. It's like you've got to achieve something awesome.
Unless you build the kit from GW, in which case every prime can have
one. Yeah, every prime can have one. But it's cool that it's in there. You know, they're modeling the stuff that's in the background. That's so cool.
Yeah.
The only other bit that we haven't talked about yet is the Clarion Vox Array. And I quite like this because it compares it to the Vox Arrays that the Astra Militarum have. And they call the Astra Militarum boxes, the Vox casters, ghost boxes.
Yeah, because you can't really hear it.
Because all you hear is hissing and whirring and it's hard to make out words and all this stuff. The Clarion Vox Array doesn't have that problem. It pretty much works in every environment that you always get clear signals through it, that it's really hard to block or hack. It's basically just a Vox caster plus, that these guys have got the best gear that they can afford to give human beings, and they use it to their advantage, and that keeps them their commands coming through. I mean, when you've got such a disciplined regiment, they're going to need order after order after order. Otherwise, they're going to be like, what do we do? And you know, you've got these highly trained killers who are kind of pretty psychopaths at this point. They must be, you know, having seen their friends die, having to maybe even kill some of their friends, all that stuff. That must affect your psyche. And if you don't keep giving these guys orders, they're just going to maybe turn on each other, you know? Yeah. It must be a bit like balancing on a knife edge in that sense. And so I thought it was really cool that they give them, they make sure they have clear Vox channels all of the time, just to keep that command structure flowing, which makes them so deadly. That's the Scions, really. They're really cool guys. I'm really excited about collecting them. I've kind of decided a while ago that I was going to collect them, and just getting the codex this week and flicking through it, because I knew we were doing a section on them, has really kind of made me go, oh, I want to do these guys. They sound so cool. And I really like the GW models. I think they've done a great job on them. I'm looking forward to maybe in the new year starting my little
force. Do you know what your plan is at the moment?
My plan is, I've worked out that in the 500 points, I've got an Eversaur Assassin, who I've mentioned before on the show. He's going to be part of that 500. So alongside him will be 365 or whatever it is points of Scions, which works out 2 5-man squads with a Vox caster and 1 plasma gun in each squad, and then a Tempesta Prime command squad with, I think, a medikit to give them feel no pain, and a plasma gun, and then a plasma pistol on the Tempesta Prime. And the idea is I wanted a small elite squad, because I only had a little point to play with. A couple of elite squads that will all deep strike in theory, all on the same turn. Obviously, in game, you never know. It's a dice roll. But they all kind of deep strike in, all within command range of the Prime, who can give out the orders, which are really good. And their job is to take out the head. You know, the plasma is in there so that if it's a Terminator Chaos Lord, they can shoot him down pretty easily with that much hotshot guns. You know, if they're in a normal, let's say, Chaos, just because it's easiest, Chaos Marine squad, you know, because you're playing small points and they only have power armor stuff because Terminator armor is expensive, then they can probably shoot through that squad quite nastily. Yeah. And the idea being that all three squads come down at the same time, pounce and take out that one target, and that's their job. And if they die doing that, then they've served their emperor and served the Imperium. And if they survive doing that, then they'll get new orders through the Space Wolves, who will make contact with them, and they'll move on to their next target. And I think that really links with the fluff and the background of the Scions and how they work. Having read all the different kind of regiments that are in the Codex, I've gone with the 55th Capic Eagles. The reason I've gone for those, and they're actually the kind of all the colours that you see in the Codex themselves, that blue and khaki, that's them.
Okay.
And they're known for going out and doing specific tasks. And they've worked with the Space Wolves in the past, so it links quite nicely. I quite like that. They've worked with one of the great companies once, but they're kind of go and get that relic, go and kill that leader, and their legend status is built up about them going, doing a task and going away again.
Yeah.
And they're so good at that.
Okay.
And that's why I built them all with a plasma gun in each squad. I've got Vox casters in each squad, so their orders should go through with the reroll. That their command structure is strong with the Prime being there.
The only thing I found about having Vox cast in all the squads is you can only give commands to squads that aren't in vehicles. You can't command vehicles. So I've got a Tempestus command squad with a plasma pistol, power weapon, and 3 plasma guns with a medipack to give them feel no pain, with a Commissar Lord. He's going to be in a Valkyrie, so they're going to be in a Valkyrie, together. And 2 10-man Tempestus Scion squads, again with 2 plasma guns in each, a plasma pistol and a power weapon, with Torox Primes, with missile launchers and 20-inch auto cannons. So I've kind of gone for a rapid response.
Yeah, yeah.
They're primarily to go with my Inquisition force, because that's 750, so that means I can have a 1750 game.
Yeah.
And that'll be 2 Valkyries, 2 Primes, sort of zooming up the board.
Yeah.
So that'd be quite cool. And I've gone for the...
Playing out of all the Vox casters.
It's very Flight of the Valkyrie. I've gone for the... Oh, I'm just going to try and find them now. It's been so long since I've looked at them. It's really bad. I've been trying to get everything else done, let alone...
Yeah, well, now you've got a new Blood Angel Codex to play with.
This has come under the unending projects that I somehow managed to pick up. But it's okay. I don't mind. It keeps me busy, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the 88th Alphuric Lions. They are from a... they were fighting with Blood Angels on the volcanic moon of Jalabri. It was the
Jalabri,
J-A-L-B-R-E-E, Jalabri.
It's like Felder. All again.
that the 88th were fighting on this planet with Blood Angels, and they displayed such great courage and skill and maneuverability that the Blood Angel was so impressed. Brother Corbolo was so impressed, who was leading the strike force for the Sons of Sanguinus, that he basically took them. And have them. They're his pets.
Oh, okay.
He always asks to fight with them whenever he goes, and whenever he goes and fights with the Militarum Tempestus or the Sons.
Okay, that's really cool.
They fight with them a lot. So I've gone with them. The armor's a little bit bleak, really. It's kind of like a grey colour with black breeches and a red shoulder pad and gold
helmet. That's quite cool, though.
Yeah, it's cool. It's just bleak.
Well, very bleak. It's the Grimdark.
Grimdark armor.
Yeah.
But no, so I'm sort of basing it so I can flip them between being with my Inquisition and being the Blood Angels.
Blood Angels, yeah.
Kind of matches everything together. So, yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, my plan is that mine are only going to go with my Space Wolves, and not all the time, and they're literally such a small unit. It's like the Space Wolves are waging war, and the Assassin has been sent in. And to almost back up the Assassin for his task, they've sent a Tempestus squad, like a couple of squads and a Prime to make sure it happens, to go and take out that high-profile target, whether that's a squad of Terminators, whether that's a Chaos Sorcerer or a Hive Tyrant or whatever that needs to be. They're there to go and take that and then get out or wait for new orders to come through.
What you should do at the beginning of your game is to go, my Scions are going to go after this squad.
Yeah,
basically name it and call it out. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, I think that'd be really cool. Just adds that fun. I mean, the thing for me that Scions bring to the table, as it were, for 40K, is that they're a really fun ally. They give depth to your force. That I think I don't see the wanting of running a whole army of just Scions. Mm. I love the fact that you can just ally in a few of them, and it suddenly gives a real twist to your whole force. Like my Space Wolves is, nearly 7,000 points, and they're the big thing. But then you add that 500 points of Science and an Assassin, give them, like I say, a target, and, call it out at the beginning of the game. That's just really fun between you and your friend across the table, and see if they can, achieve their target. That's a really cool twist on it. And it just gives another depth to the force, to the story you're playing in your game, which I think is a really cool thing. I think being a narrative gamer and trying to do that a bit more, it gives me that opportunity. They represent the IG elite, and I think sometimes IG are kind of forgotten that they're actually really good soldiers. That you have PDF, and then the IG are kind of like our Royal Marines and our SAS, and they're really well trained
With flashlights.
With flashlights, yeah. Compared to everyone else's firepower, and the Scions are even above that. So they're a really cool force, but for me the idea of that fun ally and to sow that depth into your games and into your force is just so cool.
And of course the fact you can have 5-man squads with AP3 weapons is not always necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, completely. They're low AP weaponry, and they've got access to so many special weapons. I think even in a 5-man squad you can have up to 2 with special weapons.
I think it's 1 plasma.
It might be 1 plasma. I'm pretty sure you can have up to 2 in a 5-man squad, and you can go up to 10 if you want, but the specials is just you can have 2 people with them, so that's really cool. But that's the Adeptus. No, that's not right. So that's the Militarum Tempestus Scions in a bit of a nutshell. Hope you learned something new. I definitely did. I got really excited about the Force, and it's made me really want to do my allies for the Space Wolves and watch this space. I'm going to be starting them in the new year, and Sam's going to kind of continue. I guess you've kind of started yours, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got one squad of 10 so far.
Okay, cool.
Fully painted, fully based. Like I said, it's a bit boring painting them. They're black.
Yeah, well, quick though.
Silver. Yeah, quick. I sort of didn't like painting black. I don't like painting black. My Death Company were hard enough, let alone painting more. Just looking at the codex now, up to 2 Tempest of Sirens that have not been upgraded. One of the options above may replace their Hotshot Las guns with one item from the special weapon list. So regardless if they're in a 5-man squad, they can still take 2.
Yeah, the only reason I don't is I don't have the points.
No.
But yeah, so they're cool. Check them out if you want a kind of guard vibe and you want that elite kind of force, whether that's a full army or a really cool ally.
Yeah.
Check them out. Hope you learned something in this 40K spotlight. We're going to have a break and come back with our last segment. So, welcome back. This is our last segment of the show. It's been really fun recording in really this new setup.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
If you go to the Facebook page, you can see the setup.
You've said that at least twice now.
Well, I want people to go to the Facebook page.
And so do I, actually. I would love some more likes. I'd love some more iTunes reviews. They're really good for us. We'd love more feedback. We've been trying to put that into effect. Hopefully the sound has been a bit better.
We were talking about it in one of the breaks, actually, that it feels like every episode we bring out, we get that little bit better. So that, like, as in the quality, the planning element, the
being comfortable in front of a mic.
Yeah, I think we never went into this with the we know what we're doing. I think quite the opposite.
We definitely went into still thinking, don't.
We don't know what we're doing. We still don't know what we're doing, but trying to get that little bit better.
Yeah.
So the feedback really helps us. So I know Sam put up there saying that he would like to see the photos of the stuff we're talking about. So if we're talking about like my night, then I'm going to put that up there. I'm also going to put some photos up from the
We need to
Overlords.
Do some higher quality photos.
Yeah. Some photos from the Overlords and some photos from tonight's recording to kind of give like a picture of what we're doing.
Yeah.
But right, let's get on with the last segment.
Yeah, anyway. So yeah, the last segment, like I say, it's been a really good episode. It's been quite a long episode. So we're just going to have a general discussion in this segment of Life in the Hobby. This is us just talking about anything to do with 40K, really. Anything to do with our hobby, how we're affected. Next episode, we're going to talk about working with Forge World models. And everything to do with that, painting them, building them, converting them, I don't know why you would, but anyway, probably not talking about converting them.
You could have a Thunderhawk flying with a fire wrapped underneath it, and the Thunderhawk throws the fire wrapped towards the ground.
No.
I'm going to do that when I own
your
model.
I'm claiming silliness.
When I own your model.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Well, paint it then.
Shut up. So this is our life in the hobby. We're going to be talking around the question of how knowing your army's background affects your hobby.
Right, so
yeah, that's it. That's
how many Space Wolf books have you read?
Oh man, well, there's the 2 omnibuses about Ragnar Blackmane, Battle of the Fang. I've got Blood of Asaheim. I've just started Stormcaller this month, so it's not finished, but I've started it. I've read at least 7 short stories. You're running out of fingers now. But yeah, at least 7 short stories. I said Battle of the Fang.
So a lot then, basically.
So a lot.
Is what we're coming
a lot.
To.
I mean, the codex itself, you know? The codex itself has so much background and fluff in it, especially fluffy because it's the puppies codex, getting there before you did. Yeah.
Sorry, I was away from my microphone for a second. Just go for that again. But, so the fluffy codex, yeah? Puppy fluff.
Yeah, puppy fluff. Good. There's so much background in there that it just makes me think about how this army works. What's the motivation of some of the characters, their background. You know, we spoke about Maladrax last episode.
Yep.
And Lysander and his motivations and how he chooses to act as a person in charge of a chapter of Space Marines. And I think you can really represent that on the battlefield by how you choose to play that character. So Ragnar Blackmane in all the books is a charge headlong into combat, fight stuff. He wants to be in the middle of the melee. So I, you know, in my head, if I'm ever challenged in a combat with Ragnar on the table, he is accepting that challenge. It doesn't matter if there's a wolf guard in there. Doesn't matter. He would always step up. You know, and knowing that about him and reading the books and stories about him makes me play him differently.
So how do you think these stories change the way in which you construct your army when you're about to play a game?
I guess for me, I look at how they choose to fight.
Okay.
I think the new codexes, especially the very recent codexes, have started going that way.
Yep.
So we were talking about the Blood Angels Force Orc changing.
Yes.
And the Space Wolf one's different as well. You can take up to six HQs.
Yep.
In a Battleforge list.
So the Blood Angel one is you have to take a HQ, two troops, and one elite.
Yeah, one elite. So you have to have that elite in the unit.
Yep.
And it seems that they're starting to move towards individuality. I play Ragnar Blackmane's company, and they're known for their drop pod assaults.
Right.
So my lists tend to have at least three Grey Hunter squads, which are basically Space Marine Tactical Marines for non-Space Wolf players, in drop pods.
Yeah.
At least, you know. I mean, more than that, you have to be playing a little bit bigger games, like 2K kind of level. But in 1.5, 1750, I will always take three squads in drop pods because that's how they fight. You know, they're about mass inventory. They're about outflanking. They're about encircling their prey before they strike. And again, in the Codex, I get a special rule if I take the detachment where units on a roll of a 6 get outflank.
Right.
Which is really cool because my whole Codex also has the special rule where I get to re-roll my outflank. So they're quite precise on their outflank, where what side they're coming in and where. So that's really cool. And it seems that the rules in my Codex are now meeting with the fluff, and that's awesome. It seems to make, in my head, make sense. You know, there would be no point in me going, right, they don't really use that much bikes or jump packs. They tend to actually give them to the ones that are a bit psycho crazy and in the hope that they'll die quick. That's generally the background of those units. So why would I bring in a Space Wolf bike force?
Yeah, so do you think that you can play your army fluffy with being competitive still?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I aim for. I aim for an army that will work, will kick butt, that will win me games. Not that I'm that bothered about winning or losing. I want to have a fun game, really, as well as being fluffy. You know, like, I don't think it's that hard. Ragnar is a beast. Rune priests are, you know, the Space Wolf librarians are really strong and quite low pointed, and I can take up to like 5 or 6 of them, and I don't think that's a rule abuse. I think that's there because that's the way the army runs. They have a lot of heroes who are building their own sagas, as it's, you know, sold in the Space Wolf Codex. So they're all wanting to get into the battle. They're all wanting to be there. I think you definitely can. You definitely can with Space Wolves. How do you feel about Blood Angels?
I think with the new Codex, it's kind of been revitalized. The movement of having Sanguinary Priests from the elites being spammed to go with assault squads or bike squads to give them the feel of pain, to put them into a HQ slot, makes complete sense.
Yeah, I really like that.
Like I was saying in the last segment, Brother Corbolo or Corbulu, depends on where you're from.
Corbolo.
Was running the strike force on that planet.
He
was running it, and he's a Sanguinary Priest, a named Sanguinary Priest, but he's still a Sanguinary Priest. So I think the Codex has now aligned what I would have believed the fluff would have been, or should have been, the fluff and the rule should have been. The stuff like squad sizes is a little bit pernickety. There's nothing that ever really talks about squad sizes in the Blood Angel Codex. Yeah, it's the same for everyone else.
Same for everyone.
I think I like the best, the bits of the fluff that I prefer are the named characters. So
Okay. Hearing
why they're named. So why Mephiston is so Mephiston-like.
Yeah.
How Dante got to where he is today, and Brother Corbolo, yeah, and why he's a named Sanguinary Priest. So that's the bits that I like, and incorporate them into my army, trying to pay homage to... to them and having them there for the right reasons. So I very rarely run characters in low-pointed games because the character wouldn't be there in a low-pointed game.
Yeah,
if I'm running a 500-point strike force, why am I turning up with Mephiston?
Yeah, unless there's a story behind why he's there, you know?
So Mephiston may be escorting a squad of Death Company with Astraff. Cool, awesome. He might be there to psych her up the Blood Angels?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
No. But yeah, I mean, it raises a good point. I think the named characters, you know, the reason I love Ragnar Blackmane so much is because of the books done by Black Library and the Space Wolf Omnibus. He's like the central character, and they're starting to kind of add him into some of the new books, and that's really cool. He kind of shows up in these odds and ends. Once he's a wolf lord, because it starts with him being a, you know, initiate, you know, a new space marine recruit and working his way up and his story and all that stuff. And because of that, he represents something more on the table. You know, putting Mephisto on a table because he's badass and his rules are good is fine, but it's not the full picture. It's not the wholeness of 40K. You know, you want to know the reason why he's a badass, why he has that stat line, because you read his slot in the codex. You read the stories about him. You know, if you don't do that, you're missing out on something. You know, that model means less to you. And in the game, you'll do silly things with it because it doesn't befit the background, because you don't know the background. So recently, Imperial Fist Ben and Ultramarines Ben have both started reading the Horus Heresy books because they've never read them. And especially Ultramarine Ben, who's been in the hobby for a long time, I find that kind of strange, because they're so good stories and they're such a background in which we play. Like, what happens in the Horus Heresy sets the scene for 40K.
Stays in the Horus Heresy.
And these guys are reading it and they're coming up to me and going, oh, that was so cool, and I never knew this about these people and all that stuff. That was me not giving away spoilers for those that haven't read them. And you can see them light up about the hobby again. You can see them go, oh, that means I'd really like to do this.
I can do it this way, or I can take this force because it did this on this planet. And
I
think playing with the background of your army certainly means that you're kind of... It's like if I bought models and didn't paint them. Or if I played with paper cutouts of my models.
Yeah.
It's like... You're not completing the trifecta of Warhammer if you're just going to ignore the fluff.
And I was very much like that. When I started, I was, you know, I loved modelling, and I still do, and that's the part that I get really excited about, building my models, doing some kit bashing or converting with green stuff and various things. I love that part. And then I used to just play, and I never had anything painted. And then, you know, I was challenged on that, and I started painting, and I really enjoyed it. I find it hard to get going, but once I've started, I really enjoy it. And now I'm at a point where I kind of am sad to see me playing models that aren't painted.
Yeah.
Because I've either not got time, or I've, you know, failed myself by not doing it. Because, you know, I think it might have even been the very first episode where we talked about terrain and how important that is in the game, in this very segment. And painted scenery, a painted board with two painted armies, has so much more effect. And I truly believe that knowing the background of your army adds even more to that. Not just the named characters, just the squads and the army and how it works and how it fights and all of that stuff, you know, recreating certain battles, building models in a certain way because of what you've read. You know, my actual building and converting of a model has been affected by knowing the background.
But why is that important? So why should I go and model a specific guy the same way because it says it in a book?
Because I think that there's a part of this that is role play. Yeah, not as in dress up like your army, scream war at the top of your voice when it comes
so
up.
Annoying.
No, like, fine, if people want to do that, cool, power to you, but I'm not going to do it as an orc player. I'm just not built that way, and it's not me. But there's part of you that should dive deep into this.
If you're not enjoying it,
yeah.
If you're not enjoying, well, it depends, because part of me wants to say, if you don't enjoy the fluff of your army, why are you playing that army?
Yeah.
But the other part of me goes, well, I think if you start an army because it's a meta, so you start Imperial Knight army because it's meta and it's good and you can load them out in a certain way.
Well, we saw a lot of that of Eldar. You know, Eldar got a lot of a boost and a much bigger popularity than they ever had because their codex is pretty strong.
But it's like, realistically, it's like, what's the point? Why would you go and pay all this money to just build an army you can win with? Great.
Yeah, and I think that's it. You know, that's focusing on the playing side too much, you know? And I think that knowing the background of your army is almost where you start. Let's face it, the first pages in your codex, of anyone's codex, is, other than the introduction, contents page, etc., is the background. It's the story of the army, because you start with that, and then that affects how you see a captain, how you see a librarian, because you read about why they're important, why are they even there. You know, there's an amazing background, and it's there to be read and enjoyed. If you want to just get models and play this game and play the rule set, great, more power to you, and I'd love to play you. But I've just learned over the years, you know, the few years I've been doing this again, that the background and the books and the novels and the stuff in the codexes is so rich with flavour and emotion and character that if you miss it, you're just missing out.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool. Go and do it. Go and read it.
I think that's the key message, is it's not that by only playing the game and not looking at the fluff that it's wrong. I just think you're missing out a large chunk of the game. Of the hobby, because it is a hobby. It's like it's like anything else. It is a hobby, and it's kind of like, if you want to be fully immersed in that and spend your time doing it, then great. But maybe you should learn everything about it.
Yeah, I guess the thing for me, and the most important thing, is that, like any story, any universe, any whatever, whether it's Star Wars, The Lord of the Rings, all that kind of amazing stuff that people have held on to for how many years. You know, when was Lord of the Rings written? You know, so long ago. And yet, I can connect with those characters. I want to cheer on those characters. I want to see them develop. I want to pour my heart and soul into their paint job. You know, because they matter to me, because I'm part of the story. I understand what's going on here. And I just, it's just so good. And by missing out, you're genuinely missing out on something that could make your hobby go from there to there.
You can't see the hand gestures.
And it's good radio, yeah, I know. But, you know, it's just it takes you up another level. Just do it. I don't know how to end this section.
Read the beginning of your codex and put your comments on a postcard and send it to us.
Yeah, just enjoy. Anyway, we're going to come back with our final thoughts and end this mammoth of an episode. So here we are, final thoughts. Final thoughts for the final episode of the year.
Well, I've just really got one question. Do you think they know it's Christmas after all?
They should do by now. but yeah, this is our Christmas episode. It's been a blast recording it. I've really loved talking about the Scions. It's got me really pumped for that project.
I want to go back and get them out of the box when I get home, actually, just to see what kind of state they're in and see if I can do anything to them.
I think in January I'm going to have to pick up my first set. But yeah, I'm really excited about those. Just being able to share with you how much we love the background of this hobby, and hopefully encourage you and not preach at you about how awesome it is, and go and do it. And you'll see so much more of this game. You know, it's not just about moving models around. What else did we talk about? New Blood Angel Codex, kinda.
I'm stoked that next month we're going to talk about it, actually. It just means I'm going to have to read all of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, our spotlight will be the new Codex and talking about that. So that'll be really cool. Bit of background again, and rules and units, and our goods and our bads and our uglies and all that stuff. More pain and joys. And we're just going to talk about Forge World, which is exciting.
Yep. You've got far more Forge World than I have, so probably you leading that conversation, but okay.
Well, should be fun. So this is our last one of 2014. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it gets to you as a lovely Christmas gift on Christmas Day. And we'll see you in the new year. Bring on 2015.
2015.
Sweet. See you guys soon.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, we're recording.
Yeah. It's because we're really rubbish at starting podcasts.
That's true. All right, here we go.
Do, 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 do.
Need to get that fart out.
Should we? Right.
Bye.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Adeptus Terra podcast, Orphanages of the blah blah blah. Can't think about how we start. I've remembered, don't worry, we're fine.
We need to think of a name.
I need a name right now. Talking about the Scions. Here comes the storm.
No. When you're in need, you can count on me.
No.
It's like when it's got to be, Toy Story I'll song. Be there for you. What about...
It's Christmas.
We should say, can we start with Happy Christmas?
It's Christmas.
It's Christmas!
Yeah, we're not doing that.
Oh.
Is that the plan?
It will be out on Christmas Day.
Yeah, you're
editing. I'll sit there in my PJs and just upload it. Cool. Or edit it on Christmas Day.
Yeah, here we go.
Because it's really annoying that Christmas has fallen at the end of the month this year.
Yeah, because it doesn't every year.
No, it doesn't every year.
So, yeah, long story short, what's that right? Oh, blah.
Long story short.
Let's just start again.
Base game. So it was the not Malediction.
What?
What's the?
Maelstrom.
Maelstrom, there you go. Same sort of thing.
It's like Malediction. That's a psychic spell.
So we played the Malediction. No.
Maelstrom.
We played the Maelstrom games, and that was pretty fun.
You're going to cut all that out, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Just make yourself sound like you knew what you were talking about. Sorry, I didn't want to burp in the mic. So it just got squished.